CBS News. I'm Steve Futterman, live in Los Angeles, where the Mel Gibson case has taken a new step today. As expected, the actor-director has been charged with driving under the influence. It was filed as a misdemeanor. A second misdemeanor was charged, also filed, driving with a high blood alcohol level. Gibson was also charged with a violation of the vehicle code, driving with an open container. Since no felonies involved, Gibson does not have to appear in court. The charges potentially carry a six-month jail term, but this is a first offense, so jail is very unlikely. Gibson is due in court on September 28th, but there could be a plea bargain deal before that. I'm Steve Futterman, live in Los Angeles, now with more CBS News. Here's Bill Vitka.
It's blowtorch weather from Maine to Oklahoma down to the Gulf. The air tastes like sulfur. It's scorching, not only in the sun and during the day, but at night. David Feltkin of the National Weather Service.
As cities expand and we add more brick and cement and road pavement and getting rid of the trees and the grassy areas, we are adding more heat. And as a result, nighttime temperatures will be warmer.
Authorities warn that the demand for electricity could lead to blackouts, records being set for usage. AAA saying they're getting swamped with repair calls. If that's not enough, there's a hurricane watch for parts of the Caribbean, and Tropical Storm Chris is expected to intensify into a hurricane. It could threaten Florida as early as Sunday. Forecaster Jamie Rome.
It's too soon to be panicking or anything like that, so I think people for now should just watch it. Now is a good time to check up on your hurricane supplies. Make sure you got everything you need.
Hurricane watch for part of the Bahamas and the Turks and Caicos Islands. It will likely graze Puerto Rico, which will get major downpours, possible flooding. Two islands off the coast evacuated. It could pose a threat to the Gulf of Mexico, including oil and gas production. There's a new study that may have you scratching your head, and maybe more than that. It identifies gaps in measles vaccination. A new outbreak might be just a plane ride away. Correspondent Barry Bagnato.
A New England Journal of Medicine study warns that an unusual measles outbreak last year in Indiana could be repeated even though most Americans are vaccinated. CDC researcher Amy Parker.
There are pockets of people who are unvaccinated. Those are the areas that are at risk of an imported case of disease.
Which groups in the U.S. need more vaccination attention? This study says international travelers, healthcare workers, and homeschooled children. Barry Bagnato, CBS News, Washington.
Israel and Hezbollah raising the stakes on the battlefield. Even as Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert said Israel will keep fighting until an international force is deployed, the U.N. canceled a meeting planned for tomorrow to consider the makeup of an international force in the Mideast and which countries would contribute troops. On Wall Street, they made money. Blue chips up 74, the Nasdaq higher by nearly 17. Stocks were getting a bounce on good earning reports from, among others, Procter & Gamble and Time & Warner. This is CBS News.
There are infinite dynamics in business. For example, the $10 million saved is $10 million earned dynamic. Or the our month end reports actually happen by the end of the month dynamic. Or the yes, I can forecast the revenue, no, I don't own a crystal ball dynamic. How do you manage these dynamics? Microsoft Dynamics. Software solutions that are specially designed to improve your customer relationship, financial, and supply chain management. To find out more, visit Microsoft.com/Microsoft Dynamics.
If you want someone to tell you what you want to hear, we're not the place. But if you want someone to tell it like it is, come to Match.com.
You need to start making some different decisions and embracing some different strategies to get what you want.
Match.com is working with Dr. Phil, and our members are loving his insight. We'll show you who. He'll show you how. So come see what Match.com can do for you. Match.com, the number one site for love.
Caught off guard, President Bush was said to be surprised when Fidel Castro was stricken by illness. Mr. Bush now has a wait-and-see attitude, according to Senator Robert Bennett. The state of Castro's health is a matter of speculation. He has not been seen. He has not spoken. The Rolling Stones have paid just a fraction of their vast income to the tax man. Dutch records show that the band's tax bill for the last 20 years was a little more than $7 million on earnings of $450 million. The Stones have gone Dutch, choosing that country to set up foundations to decide control of the Stones catalog should one of them die. Tax details have leaked out because, according to The Independent, the Stones are getting ready for their final curtain call, making their wills. Bill Vitka, CBS News.
Get the good stuff. Did you know the hot temperatures of summer can be tougher on your car's battery than the cold? That's true. That's why you'll be glad to know that right now at Napa Auto Parts, you can get a Napa Legend battery for as low as $59.99. And like everything that carries a Napa name, it's manufactured to the highest industry standards. So if your battery isn't getting the job done, take care of it now with a Napa Legend battery. Napa, get the good stuff.
Get the good stuff!
Want to go to the beach?
Okay, let's walk.
Honey, we live in Kansas.
Well, have you seen the price of gas?
Well, have you seen the price of rental cars? On Priceline, we can rent a car for as little as $14 a day.
$14?
Name your own price and save up to 25% off.
Oh, so we can pay for gas
with what we save on a car.
Priceline, more ways to save. Exact rental car brand shown only after purchase.
That's me.
Welcome to another edition of the Peter B. Collins Show, originating on the left coast. We're live on KRXA 540, Monterey, Salinas, Santa Cruz, and Freedom. We're also live on KGOE 1480, Eureka, Arcata, Humboldt County, and our program's heard in the nighttime on 1240 Talk City, KSAC, Sacramento, and 1480 KPHX in Phoenix, Arizona. We got a power-packed lineup today, and I want to commend our producer, Matt Renner. He does a great job. Coming up in about 15 minutes, Marjorie Cohn. She is the incoming president of the National Lawyers Guild and a professor of constitutional law, will join us with some commentary on the Middle East. Also, this hour, CBS terrorism analyst and former CIA head of the Bin Laden desk, Michael Scheuer, will join us. Next hour, Chris Tonsing with his daily update on developments in the Middle East. Then Ray McGovern, the former CIA analyst, and he has some opinions a little different from Michael Scheuer. He'll be joining us to talk about some issues. Plus, David K. Johnston, New York Times reporter, the author of Perfectly Legal, is going to talk about some of the shenanigans going on as the IRS has cut well over half of the enforcement attorneys in the estate division. Yeah, the people who enforce the death tax. Could be political. We'll find out. And we're going to spend our final hour today with Larissa Alexandrovna, the investigative reporter and managing editor of RawStory.com. And we dispatch Tommy Panic to try to infiltrate the Rupert Murdoch Gab Fest along the central coast at the Pebble Beach Golf Complex. And if he's successful, he'll join us with a live report sometime later today. That's all ahead here on the Peter B. Collins Show, and you're welcome to call whenever the urge strikes you. And as long as the First Amendment is in full effect, my toll-free number is a new one. It's 1-888-5-PETER-B. You got that? 888-5-PETER-B, or if you prefer all digits, 888-573-8372. Returning to our program today is Gitanjali Gutierrez. She is a staff attorney at the Center for Constitutional Rights, where she has been for a year now. I note here that it was last August 1st that she joined CCR, and before that she was a member of the legal team working on the landmark case at Guantanamo Bay, Razul versus Bush. And Gita joins us this afternoon. Hello. Welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show today.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. And it's interesting because it was just, what, Gita, about 3 weeks ago that the Supreme Court, actually a month ago now, the Supreme Court issued its ruling in Hamdan versus Rumsfeld. And Michael Ratner, your boss, said it doesn't get any better than this. We talked with one of your other superiors, Bill Goodman, the legal director. And there was, real satisfaction that the Supreme Court had finally seen fit to put some limits on presidential power and prerogative. And now we see a draft piece of legislation surfacing in Washington last week that not only intends to legitimize the illegal actions that have already taken place at Guantanamo Bay and perhaps elsewhere, probably elsewhere, but the draft measure includes applying these detention methods and terms to American citizens. Didn't they learn anything from the Supreme Court decision?
Apparently they didn't learn a thing at all. I think that's what's been most astounding is that a month ago we had our president was saying that he was ready to close Guantanamo. He was waiting for the Supreme Court decision. He recognized the disaster that it's been for the United States. And a month later, done a complete turnaround and is getting ready to open a new maximum security facility there and trying to nullify the second Supreme Court decision to strike down the efforts to expand executive power.
Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about the expansion plan at Gitmo. It's a whole new wing.
It's actually a whole entire new prison that's been built there. Halliburton secured a multi-year contract to do a number of construction projects in Guantanamo, and Camp 6 is one of them. It, I guess, is near completion now and would be a brand-new prison where they'll be moving individuals into to detain them.
And when will it be completed?
It was supposed to have been completed in July. That was the original date that came from the Public Affairs Office in Guantanamo, and their most recent announcements are that Camp 6 is poised to be opened in September. And it's completely inconsistent with the things that President Bush was saying prior to Hamdan coming down. So either they really, truly don't have a plan for how to operate or exit Guantanamo, or the administration just keeps flip-flopping back and forth depending on what Congress does and whether the courts buy their arguments or not.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you're being a little diplomatic there. Flip-flopping around, in my book, is not telling the truth, dissembling, or flat-out lying. And I believe there have been many efforts to mislead the American public on the true intentions there. Now, I don't understand the need for a new prison, a new whole camp there at Gitmo, because we have drawn down the population, which peaked, what, at 800 or 900 a couple of years ago? And from what they tell us, it's in the 500 range now. Why do they say they need a new facility?
It's beyond me why there needs to be a new facility or even ongoing detentions at this point. And I think that we've gone beyond an illegal prison, and we're now moving into a completely immoral situation in Guantanamo. I just returned a few days ago from spending nearly a month there and met with a number of men who never held a gun against the United States, never fought. Men who were staying in guest houses in Pakistan, where many young men pass through as they're traveling through the country, and maybe some other man in the guest house is affiliated with Al-Qaeda. But these young men were swept up and have been held in Guantanamo, and they're entering their fifth year of detention. And they are learning of new nieces and nephews that have been born that they've never met. They're learning about their siblings who are graduating from college or going on and starting jobs, and their life is just passing before them. And the idea that we're going to be able to try dozens or hundreds of Al-Qaeda terrorists in Guantanamo in some kind of newfangled military commission is ridiculous, because those men, the terrorists, are not in Guantanamo. Those men could not be charged with the crime, and the fact that we're continuing to detain them and may move them into Camp 6, to me, is a real crime.
You're just so soft there, Gita. I can hear it in your voice. These are bad guys. George W. Bush told us they're bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
And he tells us, in a way that is so far-fetched and hard to believe, that some of these gentlemen can't be released because if they're repatriated, they might be harmed in their home countries. And I'm sure most of them, if not all, would prefer to take their chances on returning home than to stay in limbo at Gitmo. Additionally, he tries to make the claim that these people have information that could be valuable to us if we can just torture them enough to squeeze it out of them. Now, if they've been there for 5 years, what the hell could they possibly know about the current capabilities or intentions of Al-Qaeda or any other group?
Absolutely. If they ever knew something to begin with, it's not helpful now. And I think we're starting to see the divisions even within the Bush administration. Many of the insiders within the military structure are starting to come out and really announce, whether it's to Congress or to the public, their dissent with what's happening in Guantanamo, the path that Bush and Cheney and Rumsfeld have gone on. And I think it's because of this. They recognize that there's not intelligence value. They recognize that the men in Guantanamo are not Al-Qaeda terrorists and that the vast majority of them are not fighters. And there's been a number of reports since 2004 that the men in Guantanamo did not have intelligence value and didn't pose a threat to the United States. And this administration refuses to acknowledge the facts and refuses to acknowledge the law.
Yeah. It's just so shameful, and it really hurts me to be an American and see this is being done in the name of making Americans safer. It's a crock, and it undermines our standing both domestically and internationally, and it does feed the fears of many that we've already had a coup in this country. We just haven't recognized it yet.
It's. I would agree with that. We have faced a president right now who is trying to alter the structure of our government to make himself the person who makes the laws, says what the laws are, and then executes the law. And that's not how our government's structured. And he's showing us why we shouldn't have a country like that. The innocent men who are in Guantanamo, who've been detained for so many years with no basis and no due process, tell us why we don't have a dictatorship and why we don't have a kingdom, and that perhaps we should actually try democracy for once in this country.
And Gita, I'm still stunned, circling back to where we started, the draft legislation that has been submitted by the administration to the Senate Armed Services Committee. Debate is supposed to get underway this week. And according to the draft, the military would be allowed to detain all enemy combatants until hostilities cease. And it defines enemy combatants as anyone engaged in hostilities against the United States or its coalition partners who has committed an act that violates the law of war and this statute. There is no line drawn to protect U.S. citizens from this bill, which falls well below the constitutional guarantees Americans enjoy.
Absolutely. And there's not only does it have limits to protect U.S. citizens, it also does not have any time limits whatsoever. And as far as the administration's concerned, we are engaged in an indefinite global war on terror. And the president wants the power to pick up people all over the world, U.S. citizen or non-U.S. citizen, and be able to detain them indefinitely, perhaps for generations.
Yeah. Gita, thank you for your work. Got about 30 seconds. Anything you'd like to add from your impressions in your month at Guantanamo?
Just that what we're doing there is immoral and that we are truly destroying the lives of these men and their families. And I hope that Congress and the American public can finally come to their senses.
Visit the website ccr-ny.org. That's the Center for Constitutional Rights. Our thanks to Geetanjali Gutierrez. We'll talk to you again, Gita.
Thank you, Peter.
My pleasure. Coming up next, Marjorie Cohn joins us. She's a professor of constitutional law and a commentator. She'll be joining us next to talk about Hezbollah, Bush's enemy du jour. And you can join us if you'd like, toll free at 1-888-5-PETER-B, here on the Peter B. Collins Show. KRXA 540, progressive talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz.
ZNS Auto Sales in Monterey, family-owned for 30 years, is where partnership works. Whether you're a first-time buyer and need a safe economy car, or looking for a truck or SUV or a classic, they have it all. Call ZNS before you make that final decision. ZNS open every day at 1179 Del Monte Boulevard between the Navy Post Graduate School and Lake El Estero. High-quality used cars at the very best prices. ZNS Auto Sales, where partnership works.
Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? White picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity, or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, PattyRossCarmel.com.
It's Behind the Wheel, the Consumer New Car Review. I'm Peter B. Collins. This week, I've been behind the wheel of the 2006 Suzuki Grand Vitara, a midsize SUV that seats five. With four-wheel drive and a 2.7-liter fuel-injected six-cylinder engine and a five-speed automatic, the Grand Vitara performed very well on a weekend drive to the coast. Good acceleration and passing power, easy to handle, quick to respond. My only complaint is that the four-wheel drive setup makes the steering a little tight at low speeds and requires a bigger turning radius. Inside, it's roomy and attractive with all the accessories you need, including a 6-CD changer with a subwoofer to annoy other drivers. Suzuki offers generous warranties and a great price. The mileage could be better. By the numbers, the 2006 Suzuki Grand Vitara gets 19 mpg in the city, 23 on the highway, and stickers in California for about $23,000. Behind the wheel, I'm Peter B. Collins.
We at KRXA want to thank you for your support of our advertisers. Together, we're working as a community to help take America back. Keep thinking outside the box and call us with any ideas and comments anytime. Tell your friends about KRXA, and together, we'll help change the direction of this great nation. Working as a team, we're making a difference, and it's needed now more than ever. I'm Sheila Gale. Thank you for listening to Progressive Talk, AM 540 KRXA.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, where former CIA director of the Bin Laden desk, Michael Scheuer, will join us in our next segment. We're joined now by the Peter B. Collins House Counsel. She's still unpaid, but a great volunteer contributor. Marjorie Cohn is a professor of constitutional law at the Thomas Jefferson School of Law in San Diego, and she is the new president of the National Lawyers Guild. And you can read the commentary we're going to discuss today at commondreams.org. It was posted yesterday. Marjorie Cohn, welcome back to the Peter B. Collins Show.
My pleasure, Peter.
It's really heartening to talk to Jewish Americans who are willing to really offer honest criticism of U.S. policy in the Middle East at this time. And the piece you wrote, Bush's Enemy du Jour, I think really offers an interesting angle on Hezbollah. Talk a little bit about that from your personal perspective.
Well, you know, the word Hezbollah is rarely mentioned in a sentence unaccompanied by the word terrorist when you're watching TV or reading about it in the newspaper. And Bush is, they're now speculating on which is a worse terrorist organization, Al-Qaeda or Hezbollah. Richard Armitage, who used to be Deputy Secretary of State during Bush's first term, says that Hezbollah might be the A team of terrorists and Al-Qaeda is actually the B team. But, you know, although Hezbollah has been suspected of complicity in the 1985 hijacking of a TWA jet, Hezbollah denies ever attacking anybody outside of Lebanon or Israel. And Hezbollah takes responsibility. It's happy to take responsibility for what it does. Hezbollah doesn't even attack other non-Shiite sects of Islam with inside Lebanon. And it's, you know, I am not a fan by any means of Hezbollah, but it's important for us in the United States to understand that in Lebanon, 87% of the Lebanese people support Hezbollah. And this survey was, and this is Christians and Sunnis as well as Shiites. This survey was taken by the Beirut Center for Research and Information before Sunday's bombing of Qana, which killed over 60 civilians, mostly children, and has just created outrage throughout the Arab world. And I think it's important for us to understand exactly what Hezbollah is and what it isn't. Israel and the United States make it look like it's a big threat to Israel's security, but Hezbollah, it has a small militia. Israel has the fourth largest military in the world. It's supported by the United States. After it started attacking Lebanon, it asked the United States for more shipments of bombs, and they came right away, including bunker buster bombs, which have depleted uranium on them. Cluster bombs made in the USA are being used there. So you have the biggest military power in the world, the U.S., arming the fourth largest military power in the world, Israel, and, you know, then leading us to believe that Hezbollah is a big threat to the United States.
And I agree. agree with you that this constant labeling of groups as terrorist is confusing at least and disingenuous at best. And we have Ehud Olmert, the new prime minister of Israel, saying that he's going to continue to attack Hezbollah until the threat of terror is eliminated. Well, I'm sorry. I can see from here that terror is being used by both sides against the other.
You know, there's no doubt that it was illegal for Hezbollah to cross into Israel and kidnap two soldiers. That is a border skirmish, and it comes on the heels of several border skirmishes between the two countries for many years, at least for the last 6 years. But to use that as a pretext to overwhelmingly go in and destroy the country of Lebanon, not just kill so many civilians and wound so many civilians, but really destroy the infrastructure and bomb hospitals and bridges and libraries and apartment buildings, that is disproportionate. You know, I want to clarify something that's been in the media. Israel has said, well, we had to attack Khana because Hezbollah was firing rockets from Khana. Well, Dar Jamal, an independent journalist over there, wrote in an article yesterday that he interviewed Red Cross workers and residents of Khana, and they told him that no Hezbollah rockets had been launched from that city before the airstrikes. And then in the Irish Times, this is very interesting, the Irish Times on the 31st said that the type of missiles being fired by Hezbollah cannot be fired from within houses, mosques, hospitals, or even UN facilities, because due to the massive backblast, they can only be fired from open ground, and most of them are fired from truck mounts.
Right. Somebody sent me an email which was alleged to prove that Hezbollah was operating from residential areas, and it was a picture of an anti-aircraft gun mounted on the back of a truck that happened to be driving through a residential area.
Well, let's
that's
assume.
Hardly conclusive.
Okay, let's assume, Peter, for sake of argument, that Hezbollah had been firing rockets from Khana or from other civilian areas. Let's assume that's true, which the evidence doesn't seem to indicate is true, but let's assume it's true. According to Amnesty International, even if Israel verifies that rockets have emanated from a particular location, Israel has to take necessary precautions. In other words, it has to determine whether the objective remains military in character and whether civilians are in the vicinity. And so if Hezbollah fighters fire a rocket and then leave, then there wouldn't be any military advantage to Israel attacking there. And in fact, if Israel does, it could constitute a war crime. Now, Israel says, well, we warned all the civilians living south of the Litani River to leave. But if you look at the evidence, and this has been documented by Robert Fisk, who's lived in Beirut for 3 decades and writes for The Independent.
Right.
He was on Democracy Now! The other day, that there are instances of Israel giving warning to certain to civilians, and then the civilians start to flee and leave the way Israel tells them to, and then their motorcades are targeted.
Right.
And this happened, in fact, I wrote about this in a prior op-ed, that there were several instances of families being killed, being targeted by Israel's so-called smart bombs after they were told to leave.
Right. It really is shameful. And just 30 seconds remaining, your take on Condoleezza Rice's alleged shuttle diplomacy?
You know, I mean, I don't see any real effort here, real bona fide effort to stop the killing and the carnage when she goes back and forth and says, we don't want an immediate ceasefire, let the carnage continue. That Khana massacre never would have occurred. All Bush has to do is say stop, and Israel would stop.
And I got to stop here. Marjorie Cohn, we'll talk to you again soon. Professor of Law, Thomas Jefferson Law School in San Diego. Read her piece at commondreams.org. I'm Peter B. Collins.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
I am attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school, when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no-obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am attorney Sean Mills.
Concerned about the steady increase in home mortgage interest rates? Don't panic or overreact. Now is the time to analyze the many available options and to choose the best possible course. Leverage the equity in your home to reduce or eliminate high interest and non-deductible debt. Victor Munoz, president of Creative Mortgage, invites you for a free consultation in his Salinas offices at 201 John Street. To schedule your free Creative Mortgage consultation, call Victor at 757-0436 right now. That's 757-0436.
Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand Avenue is your one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wines, liquors, and beers at very reasonable prices. Let PG Liquors knowledgeable owner J.R. Medina and his son-in-law Chad help you choose the ideal Monterey regional or imported wine for any occasion, from an intimate dinner with that special someone to a formal affair with dozens or even hundreds of guests. If you're looking for distilled spirits, PG Liquors specializes in the finest blue agave tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and top-shelf vodkas, including Northern California's own Hangar One. Beer lovers from Carmel to Marina, beat a path to PG Liquors, which boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales, lagers, stouts, porters, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand, just above Lighthouse, the outlet for all of your beverage needs.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
Parents, do you need cash for college? This year, more than $100 billion is available for financial aid. Let AboutCollegeFunding.com help you navigate the complicated process to accessing your share of these funds. AboutCollegeFunding.com is now offering free one-hour consultations for parents in need of answers. To schedule your free one-hour consultation with RJ Moyer, call 1-888-337-9775. That's 1-888-337-9775.
Remember, the early bird gets the cash.
You've got the Peter B. Collins Show, emanating from the left coast of the United States of America. I'm glad you're listening. My toll-free number is 888-5-PETER-B.
Smiling faces sometimes pretend to be your friend. Smiling faces show no traces of the evil that lurks within.
Coming up next hour, Chris Tonsing with our daily update on events in the conflict in the Middle East. And also Ray McGovern, a former CIA analyst, will join us on the program next hour, too. And speaking of the CIA, here's a guy who served our country there at the agency. He ran the ALEC desk, named after his son, and the focus of that job was tracking the work of Osama bin Laden. Michael Scheuer is a CBS News terrorism analyst. He brought us the book Imperial Hubris, originally under the name Anonymous, and then went public during the 2004 political season. And he since published an updated edition of Through Our Enemy's Eyes, Osama bin Laden, Radical Islam, and the Future of America. Michael Scheuer, welcome back to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Thank you, Peter. You're very kind to have me back. I appreciate it.
Well, you know more than I do, and that's why we keep calling.
Well, I, I don't know about that. I do the best I can.
Well, you definitely know more than I do, and I appreciate you being available and sharing your knowledge and expertise. One quick question. Ray McGovern's going to be on next hour. Did you and he cross paths at the agency?
Not frequently, sir, but I did know Ray, and I have a great respect for his analytic capabilities and certainly even more for his integrity.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the scene in Atlanta about 2 months ago when he was invited to that session where Rumsfeld spoke and he was permitted to ask a question, and then it was characterized as heckling.
He asked Rumsfeld to tell the truth for a change.
Yeah, and he spoke for me. I'm really proud to know Ray McGovern and proud of that particular moment.
It was an excellent moment, sir.
Let me ask you to put on the hat that you were wearing when you wrote the book Through Our Enemy's Eyes and tell us what we look like from the Hezbollah perspective.
Well, from Hezbollah's perspective, we are almost exactly the same as we're viewed from Al-Qaeda's perspective. We're the master of the Israelis, or at least the force that allows the Israelis to do what they want to do, when they want to do it, to the extent that they want to do it. And I think outside of that, Hezbollah doesn't have much trouble with the United States. Hezbollah is a national organization. It's a political party within Lebanon as well as an insurgent force. And it's very nationalistically oriented. But what Hezbollah sees is our unqualified, unquestioning support for the Israelis. And therefore, we earn much of the enmity that's directed at Israel is directed to us.
Common analysis is that Hezbollah is a proxy for Iran. Does Sheikh Nasrallah see himself in that manner? Is he a toady to Iran?
I think there's very little evidence, sir, and I worked for a while on Hezbollah when I was a younger officer in 92, 93, 94. There's very little evidence that Nasrallah or his lieutenants could be described as toadies in terms of the Iranians.
Well, they take money from Tehran. Do they take orders?
Absolutely. They certainly will take orders in some instances, but they ultimately decide what orders they'll take and what they won't. I think we sometimes forget that Hezbollah has a home address, that if they do something at Iran's bidding against the United States or against another great power, much of their infrastructure that they depend on to exist can be destroyed. So it's not Iran saying jump and Hezbollah saying how high. They certainly have the same view of the United States and the Israelis, but it's not a matter of a slavish reaction to anything Iran says.
Mm-hmm. So let me ask you this, because some people who've been on our program do argue that there's linkage, that, for example, it's not an accident that Hamas chose the moment it did to use the tunnel that they obviously have been preparing for some time to burrow under the border into Israel and snatch the corporal, Gilad, who became the first cause celeb for Israel as it punished the Palestinians as a group for that act. And then the way the story goes, Hezbollah aggravated the Israelis along the Lebanon border. They launched a missile, and Israel then had a skirmish, apparently on the Israeli side. We're still curious about the hard facts there. But many people believe that there has to be some coordination between the events in the occupied territories and the decision by Hezbollah to launch this when it did.
Well, it may be, sir. I think what's lacking is any kind of evidence of that. I think what the president says and what the Democrats say is simply analysis by assertion. We believe it to be the case, therefore it is the case.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There is no doubt that the Iranians in the, through Syria supply arms and weapons to Hezbollah. There's no doubt about that. But I think it's too simplistic and too pertinent to the neoconservative agenda to simply say that Lebanese Hezbollah is a toady for the Iranians.
Mm-hmm. But given the confrontation between the Bush administration and Prime Minister Ahmadinejad and the crew in Tehran, is this a distraction that was initiated by Iran as part of its overall effort in dealing with the nuclear issues?
I don't see how that follows, Peter, simply because this only makes it the war party in the United States who want to attack Iran rather than contain Iran now has another stick with which to beat the Iranians with.
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't seem logical. You know, if you believe Ahmadinejad is a lunatic and is incapable of rational thought, then maybe it makes sense. But, you know, the Persians are not dumb. They've been a world power for two millennia, far longer than we have, and they're very good at international politics. So I don't think that this is a... I don't think we're facing a madman here. We're facing a very difficult character, someone who means us harm, but not an irrational actor.
Mm-hmm. Here's a quote from Richard Armitage, the former Deputy Secretary of State. He said, Hezbollah might be the A-team of terrorists, and that Al-Qaeda is actually the B-team. Now, given your history, first you worked on the Hezbollah issues, and then you worked on Al-Qaeda at the CIA. Do you agree with Armitage?
No, I think Armitage is all wet on that particular issue, but it's a common view in much of the government. We're the United States of America. We're the most powerful country that ever existed on this earth. Hezbollah is a small Lebanese lethal organization as well as political organization. But if they do anything to the United States, we can put their lights out permanently because we know where they live. If Al-Qaeda detonates a nuclear device inside Houston, Miami, New York, take your pick, what do we do? The greatest power the world has ever known will be standing there quivering with rage and not able to respond in any military fashion. I think Mr. Armitage is just expressing a view that's been expressed almost like a mantra since about the early 90s, sir.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Michael Scheuer here on the Peter B. Collins Show. If you have a question or comment, he's with us for the remainder of this hour, and you can call us toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. Cynthia joins us from Monterey. Hello, Cynthia. You're on the
Hello,
air.
Hello, Peter and Michael. The worst-case scenario would be that bin Laden would get, like, a dirty bomb or a nuke. But my question is... what do you think is the status of Interpol in the world today at fighting terrorism? Mm. And I'll take my answer off the air.
All right, Cynthia, thanks. Is Interpol a player?
I think Interpol is a player, sir. I'm not really well versed in the law enforcement aspect of terrorism, but they were helpful on several occasions, I know, to the FBI when we were chasing various of bin Laden's lieutenants. I think they're probably most effective within Europe. And not outside of Europe, but I wouldn't denigrate their capabilities.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't make them out to be a giant force for good either. But certainly they're competent within their realm.
And you know, given the way we try to reorganize, and I say tried because I'm not sure how much has actually occurred in trying to unify our approach and link the FBI with the CIA as called for by the Negroponte appointment and the blueprints of the 9/11 Commission, not all of which I agree with, by the way, but that's their intention. Is the communication from spook to spook? Does the CIA talk to Interpol or only to the the parallel agency in other countries?
My guess is, and it's only that, sir, is that the Interpol connection to the United States is almost certainly through the FBI. The CIA overseas does have contact with both intelligence, security, and police services with individual countries. But I think the Interpol portfolio, if you will, probably belongs to the FBI.
Mm-hmm. There's some stuff out there in the blogosphere that's not all flattering to Michael Scheuer, and I don't know how to evaluate it all because I never worked at the agency and I'm not an insider. But one of the allegations I read in one post on the web was that you had actually limited some information exchanges with the FBI when you were running the bin Laden desk at CIA. And I believe the time frame was 96 to 99, somewhere.
That's right, sir.
In that
That's
area.
That's why I was there, but it's certainly untrue. I don't know, a gentleman named Larry Johnson has been writing some stuff about things he doesn't know anything about, but I can tell you what I told the 9/11 Commission under oath, and that is that there was nothing that I read or any of my three predecessors or successors have read that was not available to the FBI. They read exactly the same electronic traffic that I read, with the single exception of fitness reports for CIA officers overseas. So people can say what they want, and you can believe me one way or another, but the idea that we were holding information back is incorrect.
Did you have a general mistrust of the FBI?
We had a generally bad taste in our mouth about the FBI simply because Judge Free and now Mr. Mueller have failed, after spending hundreds of millions of dollars, to provide their officers with a computer system.
Right. Yeah, they're still using the Radio Shack Tandy TRS-40 or whatever.
Well, sir, many times we would try to send information over there electronically, and they would call and say, it's in the system, but we can't pull it up. They would ask us to fax it, and we would then fax it, and they would call back and say, it's in the building, but we don't know where, and we would end up couriering it over to the FBI.
Uh-huh.
You know, the working level of the FBI is a very smart, talented, dedicated outfit, but they've been so miserably served by Free and Mueller in terms of simply getting them into the computer age where they could talk to their own offices and to other members of the intelligence community, that's probably still the biggest problem within U.S. intelligence.
Well, and just on the point of the computers, I'm well aware of that. I think we've made three attempts and spent more than $1 billion to try to upgrade FBI computers, and I think they're still at least two generations back.
Yes, sir, and I know that Mr. Tennant, when he was our director, offered to have them just take and duplicate the system that the CIA uses, which allows us to communicate easily and securely with every other component except the FBI, and Judge Free said, no, we're going to invent it here.
Oh, boy. We'll continue in just a moment with Michael Scheuer. If you have a question or comment, there's room for your call. 888-5-PETER-B is my number. That's 888-573-8372, 888-5-PETER-B. We'll be back in a moment here on the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to KRXA 540.
I am attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school, when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no-obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am attorney Sean Mills.
Tom Hartman.
Resolution 1440 explicitly said that no force could be brought to bear on Iraq until either Hans Blix or Muhammad al-Baradei, one of the two weapons inspectors, had indicated that there were either weapons of mass destruction or evidence of weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. And only then could force be used against Iraq. And that never happened.
It's the Tom Hartman program.
So here's George Bush saying that we took out Saddam Hussein because he wouldn't let in the weapons inspectors. And it was Bush who pulled the weapons inspectors out.
Tom Hartman on KRXA 540.
Come on in, and you will see the Central Avenue Bakery. Smell the bread, try the scones. Everything so tasty, you want to take it all home. Vegetarian is a pillar affair. We make our meals in a kosher kitchen. I'll make mine falafel with hummus stew. A side of couscous and a baba ghanoush, yeah. Open at 7 every day. Have a cup of coffee or your morning latte. Come on in,
and sit right down. It's the friendliest place in town. Central Avenue Bakery.
In PG.
For an unforgettable omelet experience, visit
the Central Avenue Bakery today. 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey, PG.
Children's books, educational toys, and games your entire family will enjoy are always in season at locally owned and operated Thinker Toys. Hi, this is Nurse Rona of Childhood Matters. We know that our children learn by playing, and the caring staff at Thinker Toys will help you choose the ideal gift for toddlers through teens. Stop by our beautiful Carmel store at 7th and San Carlos and the just renovated Thinker Toys at Del Monte Center in Monterey. Thinker Toys is open daily.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. Lines available if you'd like to join us at 888-5-PETER-B. That's toll-free, 1-888-5-PETER-B. We continue with Michael Scheuer. You know the book Imperial Hubris from 2004. And also Through Our Enemy's Eyes, Osama Bin Laden, Radical Islam, and the Future of America. It was revised and reissued in late 2005, early 2006. And he's now a consultant on terrorism to CBS News. Michael Scheuer, a few weeks back, it was revealed that the operation you set up, and as I understand it, the ALEC desk, was named after one of your sons.
Yeah.
And that was the code name, or just the handle, for the operation that you ran, which was monitoring Al-Qaeda, Osama bin Laden, and related threats. And we learned recently that that operation has been shut down. First of all, tell us what you can, you know, what's not classified. I understand it was actually a separate office off campus from Langley. Is that right?
For a while it was, yes, sir. And then we came back onto the campus after, I think, about 3 years, two and a half years.
And what reason would there be to be off campus? Did it give you more flexibility, or there just wasn't room at Langley?
No, there was plenty of room, sir, but what it gave us is the opportunity to avoid the distractions of constant bureaucratic meetings, multicultural training, all sorts of distractions that are inherent in any kind of federal bureaucracy at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And we were put away in a, some people say rightly so, we were put away in a building off campus, and we were able to put the minds of 16 very good people that happened to be in my unit against this target, and I think produced quite a remarkable success.
Mm-hmm. And from what you know, why was this operation disbanded?
I think it's purely for bureaucratic reasons, Peter. ALEC station, our unit, was always an anomaly within the agency, bureaucratically. The agency was set up at the end of World War II in a geographic configuration. Some people covered Asia, some people did Latin America, others did Africa. And we were the first unit that was ever set up to chase one particular man in one group. And we didn't fit into the normal chain of command. We weren't under the control of any geographic division, and that did not sit very well at all with the senior bureaucrats at the agency. But we reported directly through the chief of the Counterterrorism Center to the DCI, and so there was not much that the bureaucrats could do about it. And as I said, in the 10 years that this unit existed, it was very successful. And it was always causing a great deal of heartburn within the bureaucracy, and I simply think that the bureaucrats took advantage of the distraction of the government and the public on things like Iraq, wire or surveillance in the United States, the whole business about bank records, to remove a source of bureaucratic heartburn and make the world more comfortable for themselves. When the president said he didn't know anything about it, I think that's perfectly possible,
mm-hmm.
in that it's the kind of a bureaucratic maneuver that lacks any political sense and wouldn't come to the attention of the president or his lieutenant.
And what do you think the bottom line is in terms of the safety, security of the American people and our efforts to find, capture, or kill?
It's a negative in the sense that we have opted for bureaucratic comfort, bureaucratic tradition over an innovation that provided a cadre of officers who had worked for most of a decade and who had a view of what Al-Qaeda was up to in a worldwide manner. What they've done is take the unit and now distribute it into the traditional geographic arrangement. Some people watch Africa, some people watch the Far East, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, you don't have a core unit that follows Al-Qaeda and bin Laden and is knowledgeable about it around the world. You don't have a set of people who can tell if something happens in Albania, is it or isn't it connected to what's going on elsewhere within Al-Qaeda's organization.
Michael Scheuer, in today's Washington Post, a remarkable story by Dan Egan, citing the head of the 9/11 Commission, former governor of New Jersey, Tom Kaine, that he thinks the Pentagon lied to the 9/11 Commission about what really happened at the Pentagon on 9/11. Did you see that story? And do you have...
I did not see it today, sir, no.
Okay. Do you have any doubts yourself about the official report of the 9/11 Commission and how it squares with the physical evidence?
With the physical evidence, sir, I'm not competent to comment. I think that, you know, what I know about the physical attacks I saw on television, I don't know any discrepancies to what I saw, but I know the 9/11 Commission certainly pulled punches in terms of finding culpability amongst the senior leaders of the intelligence community. They couldn't find anyone to criticize for anything. And I know at least a dozen officers, including myself at CIA and from other agencies, testified under oath about problems that could and should have been corrected before 9/11 and were not. But none of that testimony made it into the final 9/11 Commission report.
Mm-hmm. Well, in simple terms, and I'm certainly not a physicist or anything like that, but I don't believe that an airliner actually crashed into the Pentagon and then disintegrated, leaving no trace of the engines, the tail section, or anything like that. The hole in the side of the building is not big enough for a 757 to have slid in there and disappeared, and yet the photographs, the selective photographs that we've been shown, you know, don't really support even the official story.
Well, it's very clear, sir, you know more about this than I do. I have read some stories other than the one you cited today speculating that it was not an aircraft that crashed into the building, but I'm afraid I just don't know the answer to the question.
Mm-hmm. Understood. So about a minute remaining, Michael Scheuer, as you look at the landscape in the Middle East right now and the way the United States has responded to date, blocking attempts to impose a ceasefire and essentially blocking for Israel to buy more time, do you think this is going to turn out with the kind of results that Israel hopes for? In other words, can military power and air power in particular decimate Hezbollah in the way Israel hopes?
No, sir. Hezbollah is a popular political group as well as a terrorist and insurgent organization in Hezbollah. Unless the Israelis annex all of Lebanon and proceed to root out Hezbollah wherever it is in that country, they're never going to succeed. And the idea that I think that's what they've realized, and they're now calling for this multinational force, which will eventually, if it's formed and goes in there, will eventually be fighting probably both Israel and Hezbollah. This is not going to work out the way the Israelis think it's going to, sir.
Mm-hmm. Michael Scheuer, always a pleasure to talk with you. Thanks for joining us today.
It's always my pleasure, sir. You're very kind.
All right, we'll talk again soon. Michael Scheuer, formerly with the CIA, now a terrorism analyst for CBS News. His most recent book is Through Our Enemy's Eyes, and it's a powerful read. I recommend it to you. Coming up next, Chris Tonsing with our daily update on the conflict in the Middle East. Then Ray McGovern, another former CIA analyst, will join us right here on the Peter B. Collins Show. And David K. Johnston from the New York Times coming up in about a half an hour from now. Stay tuned.
All you guys on the left, you demonize this president.
At Gitmo, they're not even garden variety POWs. They're the worst of the worst. They don't even receive the protection of the Geneva Conventions.
Matt, I really believe that Fagan and the abortionists and the feminists and the gays and the lesbians who are actively trying to make that an alternative lifestyle, the ACLU, People for America, all of that, who tried to secularize America, I point the thing in their face that you helped us have.
I totally concur. And the problem is we've adopted that agenda at the high levels of our government.
I believe
Saddam Hussein is a threat to the American people. And I've got good evidence to believe that.
Undeclared chemical warheads in Iraq.
The declaration that he made is proof positive.
Saddam Hussein possesses some of the world's deadliest weapons.
Saddam Hussein has biological weapons and the capability to rapidly produce more, many more.
The world is increasingly seeing this from the United States' point of view.
Saddam Hussein is not disarming.
He's not disarming.
Saddam Hussein is not disarming.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Now New Yorkers know how the folks in the West felt, sizzling.
You just got to drink water, you're going to die.
And then there's Chris, aiming right at Florida and the Gulf.
We are expecting it to become a hurricane in the next 24 to 48 hours.
This is the CBS World News Roundup, late edition. I'm Harley Carnes. A giant umbrella of heat has slowly crossed the country. It's baking the eastern third at the moment, CBS's Bob Orr reports.
With the historic heat wave adding yet another day to its sweltering record run, people took some comfort in knowing they're not alone in their misery.
It's real bad. Everybody's sweating.
A few found real relief, but even they had complaints.
It's been horrible.
And who would argue? From St. Louis to Washington, temperatures once again hovered near 100 degrees.
It's not only hot in the sunshine. When the sun goes down, it doesn't cool down much, not in the cities anyway.
We are not surprised by warmer low temperatures at night with this heat wave or just the urban heat island effect.
That's meteorologist Dennis Feltgen at the National Weather Service. With the heat comes the highway emergency calls.
We have received on a daily basis as many as 7,500 calls. That's up about 37% from an average hot day during the summer.
Martha Mead at AAA. And Con Ed in New York set a new record for electricity demand, 13,141 megawatts at 5 p.m. It broke the record set all the way back on Monday. Now this message.
If you want someone to tell you what you want to hear, we're not the place. But if you want someone to tell it like it is, come to Match.com.
You need to start making some different decisions and embracing some different strategies to get what you want.
Match.com is working with Dr. Phil, and our members are loving his insight. We'll show you who. He'll show you how. So come see what Match.com can do for you. Match.com, the number one site for love.
CompUSA email bag.
Today, Jack emails, Dear CompUSA, got any deals for a starving student? Yeah, Jack. Now through Saturday, we're giving away $10,000 every day. Plus, we've got hundreds of killer deals, like $280 off a compact laptop with AMD Turion 64 processor. It's under $500 after rebates. So get to CompUSA's back-to-school sale, because we got it, we get it. No purchase necessary, void or prohibited, store visit required. See store for details.
Did someone say hurricane season? Yeah, they did. And the name is Chris. Tropical storm right now, but heat is literally a storm's energy. And the Hurricane Center's Jennifer Pralgo says it's headed our way.
Tropical storm Chris is located approximately 115 miles north-northeast of St. Thomas. It's moving towards the west-northwest at 10 miles per hour. Winds are sustained at about 60 miles per hour.
The current cone of probability points right into the steamy Gulf of Mexico. Best indication yet, on another day of intense fighting, that the end is nowhere in sight in Lebanon, Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert.
Israel will stop fighting when the international force will be present in the south part of Lebanon. We can't stop before it.
No one even knows what nation's troops will be in an international force, nor what their rules of engagement might be, and getting them organized and in place will take weeks at best. In the meantime, these sounds of people huddled in aid centers will be commonly heard through the broad and choppy wake of the war. The DUI-related charges for Mel Gibson are misdemeanors. CBS's Steve Futterman is in Los Angeles.
There are three separate charges, two misdemeanors, driving under the influence and having a high blood alcohol level. He is also charged with having an open container in his vehicle. Since there are no felonies, Mel Gibson doesn't even have to appear in court. The DA's office chose not to charge Gibson with either resisting arrest or making threats to a law enforcement official.
And just in case you thought Uncle Sam had bolted the border doors,
Undercover congressional investigators reported they had no more trouble crossing the border from Canada and Mexico with fake IDs this year than when they first tried this 3 years ago. Gregory Coutts told senators they even used the same fake driver's licenses.
CBP inspectors never questioned the validity of our counterfeit documents.
Homeland Security officials say there are too many kinds of ID and they're too easy to fake, and this problem will be fixed in 2 years when passports will be required for border crossings. But Committee Chairman Chuck Grassley says that's too long to wait. Bob Fuzz, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
Merck wins another big Vioxx lawsuit. Jurors in Los Angeles decided the drug company is not liable for the many health problems suffered by a 71-year-old California man. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. My 8-pound Orrick XL Ultra has an 8-year guarantee. The reason my warranties are so much stronger is that my American-made vacuums are so much stronger. Orrick XLs clean thousands of hotel rooms every day. 5 years in a hotel is like 50 years in your home. Try one risk-free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200. 1-800-989-4200. You'll still be breaking in an Orrick while other vacuums are broken down.
There's nothing small about today's small business. Big hours make up big work weeks. Every meeting is a big meeting. Every call is a big call. When the only printer for all the computers breaks down, it's a big problem. And now, thanks to Aflac, even small business insurance has gone big. Introducing Aflac for Small Business. Now, your small business can have the same great Aflac products and service the big guys get. For more information, call 1-800-99-AFLAC or visit aflacsb.com.
Aflac!
For small business, American Family Life Assurance Company of Columbus. Aflac.
The old...
And the Peter B. Collins Show continues. I'm your humble host, Peter B. Thanks for joining us. Coming up in about a half an hour, New York Times financial writer David K. Johnston joins us. It's a birthday present for Diane Salazar. It's supposed to happen yesterday, but we're just a day behind, Diane. Sorry. We're going to talk about the way that the IRS has recently decided to cut back its enforcement of estate tax violators. Also, a Senate panel is looking at tax shelters of the super rich, and David K. Johnston will fill us in coming up about half an hour. And Chris Tonsing of the Middle East Report is not able to join us today for an update. He is working on the magazine that he publishes and won't be able to join us probably for a few days. And we're delighted that Ray McGovern is on the line with us. He's a former CIA analyst who's been on our program many times in the past. And he's published a powerful piece that's at truthout.org, appeared just yesterday. Ray McGovern, welcome back to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Thank you, Peter B. Good to be back.
Have you had any more close encounters with Donald Rumsfeld since we last spoke?
No, I haven't. He seems to be avoiding me.
I mean, you went over to his house, and the goons who answered the door didn't even offer you an iced tea on a sweltering Washington day.
No, and we were very disappointed, of course, but that's the way it goes here in Washington, especially during the summer.
Yeah.
I imagine he's bound out to his house there in Taos for a little vacation pretty soon.
Well, what about the place on Chesapeake Bay in the Dick Cheney no-fly zone?
Yeah, I understand he's been sighted out that way, too, actually, mm-hmm. by a couple of friends of mine. But, we thought we'd maybe get to see him at home, failed at that, and so I'm just waiting for his next public appearance, and I'll have a list of questions for him.
And wouldn't you imagine that Rummy these days is saying, oh, Condi's got the heat shield. She's taking it all for me right now. Nobody's asked me to resign in at least a week.
You know, it's really amazing, Peter B. I was reviewing some papers from a couple years ago, and I was reminded that in 2002, midway through the year, when the decision for war had already been taken, Donald Rumsfeld had the chutzpah to go up to the head of the CIA, George Tenet at the time, and say, you know, I'm not sure of this intelligence. It would be really interesting to see how this intelligence plays out over the longer haul. Do you have some people you can put on that to check out what we find versus what we've been saying? And here's Don Rumsfeld, who has corrupted the whole process by creating his own little parallel CIA in the Pentagon.
Office of Special Plans, yes.
Right, and so he goes up to Tenet, and Tenet characteristically says, oh, yes, sir, that would be a good idea. And so he hired a couple folks to come in and kind of track how how the evidence didn't parse, how the evidence didn't parallel what they had been saying. So he has Rumsfeld asking Tenet to not only hang himself, but provide the rope to do it. And just struck me as about the most cynical thing I've seen in Washington in the 43 years I've been around.
And would that be a kind of intelligence backfill? We've already made the assertions, now we better back it up.
Well, I think it's a way of Rumsfeld knowing full well that the intelligence was rotten, partly because he corrupted it, and putting Tenet on the spot, just as Condi Rice is on the spot this past week. So Rumsfeld emerges with sort of this Teflon coating, and as he did in Atlanta when I asked him those questions, he said, well, Colin Powell believed that those weapons of mass destruction were there, and he was depending on the intelligence. Certainly the CIA believed that those weapons were there, but apparently there were no weapons of mass destruction, at which point I interrupted and said, but you said you knew where they were.
I remember.
No, no, I didn't say that. I said, yeah, sure you did. You said that they were...
Northeast, here. West, or south.
Can you forget a quote like that, do you mean? He apparently forgot it momentarily because he denied it again. So, all kidding aside, wouldn't it be wonderful if the press were up to challenging the administration spokespeople and saying, look, we're going to have some people who were in previous administrations and they know something, and they're going to ask a couple questions every Friday night. We invite you to come. And if they don't come, we'll have the empty chairs, and we'll just ask the questions anyway and let the American people decide what the answers really are.
If I asked you to give a letter grade to the recent performance of our Secretary of State, what would it be, Ray McGovern?
Well, we gave Colin Powell a C- for his speech at the UN. I guess I would have to be charitable to Condoleezza Rice and give her a D.
Mm-hmm. Because she was delivering somebody else's message?
Yeah, she's really just a functionary. She does what she's told, smiles sweetly. She's under instruction. She's sort of like the president's personal secretary.
Mm-hmm.
He sends her off, and he says, now, if he can't reach me, call Dick Cheney and Don Rumsfeld. Actually, call them first, and they'll tell me what's going on. And she dutifully does that and fulfills their instructions. If they say, let the carnage continue in the Middle East, she'll smile sweetly and say, no ceasefire until we work out the whole arrangements for a peace there.
What's your reaction to her comment that this carnage in the Middle East is the birth pangs of the birth pangs of a so-called new Middle East? Is this a redux of Poppy Bush's New World Order?
Not the Poppy Bush's, but the Project for a New American Century, people.
Yeah, PNAC.
Specifically, the wonderful document, A Clean Break, securing the realm, is what it was called. It was done in 1996, and Wolfowitz and Feith and Pearl and Wormser were the American three, and there were three Israelis as well at this Israeli think tank. And they did this little visionary paper, which was so extreme that that the extremely chutzpahnik Netanyahu turned it down.
Mm-hmm.
And, surprise, surprise, when George W. Bush came in, they dusted it off and sold it to Cheney and Rumsfeld, who in turn gave the president the word. And all of a sudden it became U.S. policy. And of course, U.S. policy ostensibly is to do what Condoleezza said, to birth a new Middle East. Even though there be birth pangs, that's what we're after, a new Middle East. And of course, Bush himself said, this is sort of difficult now, but it's a great opportunity to refashion the Middle East.
Yeah, that was his radio address last Saturday, and that's a remarkable idea, that you can simply tell people not to pay attention to the carpet bombing, the leveling of these towns and cities in Lebanon, including areas that have no direct connection to Hezbollah and areas where no rockets have been launched from, and to just kind of sweep that aside and say, but hey, gosh, once all this blood is dried, it's going to be great.
Yeah, Peter B., there's a word for that, and it's called terrorism. You terrorize people when you carpet bomb them, when you bomb their apartment houses, and you give them to believe that they have no rights and they have no real prospects unless they toe the line. I'm terribly ashamed at the connivance, really, the cooperation of our government in allowing Israel to do these things.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, I've seen it bad. I've never seen it, well, with one exception, and that was the USS Liberty. Now, when I go around speaking around the country, I sometimes mention USS Liberty, and I ask the audience, well, how many people know about that? And I'm shocked. Sometimes nobody knows about it.
Well, it's interesting because a caller raised it just the other day, and I'm glad you brought it up, Ray. This was an American spy ship that was attacked by Israel during the Six-Day War. Is that right?
That's exactly right. Yeah, it was on the 8th of June, 1967. And it was known to be an American ship. They had this great big flag out there, and they were intercepting what was going on in the war between Israel and its Arab neighbors. And all of a sudden, it was reconnoitered by Israeli planes, and then it was shot at by Israeli fighter bombers and patrol boats. 34 U.S. sailors were killed. 171 was seriously injured, and the ship limped back to Malta. Now, the interesting thing is that when the Sixth Fleet heard about this, because this ship was part of the Sixth Fleet, the Admiral sent some planes to do battle with whoever was attacking the Liberty, and they were recalled. They were called back halfway to the Liberty, Lyndon Johnson and Robert McNamara. And when these poor survivors got off the boat, they were immediately threatened with court-martial if they would say anything about who sunk the ship and how big the flag was and how there could be no doubt, but the Israelis know exactly what they were shooting at. One would ask, well, why would they do such a thing like that? Well, it's pretty simple. They've looked into it at some length now, and Israel was just about to go up on the Golan Heights and take that area from Syria. And that would enlarge the war, and they were afraid that Washington would weigh in very, very strongly, saying, "Don't, whatever you do, don't do that." And the only way to avoid Washington knowing about it was to sink this ship that had the capability to intercept the frequencies on which the Israeli radio telephones were broadcasting and giving orders to their troops up in the Golan. So it was an incredibly cynical thing. And why do I recount this? I recount it simply because not until 2 years ago, when Admiral Maurer, who was the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, finished his study and determined that the lawyers themselves, the Navy lawyers, now admit that they were told to falsify the record and make it look like it was a mistaken identity thing.
Let me stop you there, and after a break, we'll ask if there are any other cynical acts more recent that you'd like to describe. Ray McGovern is my guest, a former CIA analyst, and if you have a question or comment, call me toll-free, 1-888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-5-PETER-B. We'll continue in a moment here on the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to the new KRXA 540. Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious.
Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Hey, it's Sheila Gale here to tell you about Monta Vista Wine and Spirits on Soledad Drive in Monterey. It's family-owned for over 40 years. They have all the best wines. It's the real deal. With the high-end liquor selection, it's all there. And if you have a special request, they'll take care of it for you. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits is open every day, 9 to 9. Call ahead. Your order will be waiting for you. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits, 19 Soledad Drive by Del Monte Center in Monterey. Reminds you to please drink responsibly.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service now has three locations to serve you better wherever you live. All three locations feature full service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or, in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Specializing in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for friendly, fast, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service. Now located in Santa Cruz at 1807 Soquel Avenue across from Walgreens, in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road and Soquel Drive, and now in Aptos Village across the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Call 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service full service.
What's in the box? Tell me what's in the box.
Rock Rollin' Real Estate. Every Sunday morning at 10, Rock Rollin' Real Estate gives you the best information on first-time homebuyers, 1031 exchanges, investment strategies, exit strategies, and where the next hot real estate markets are. Rock Rollin' Real Estate, where you're buying ahead of the curve. Every Sunday morning at 10.
Good afternoon, I'm Larry Olson with traffic on KRXA 540 Prunedale, Highway 56, 156, make that at Cathedral Oak Road. Two-car crash, it's been moved over to the right shoulder. Minor injuries have been reported. Crews, CHP, that includes, are on the scene. Once again, that's Highway 156 at Cathedral Oak Road. Marina, southbound Highway 1 before First Street, stalled out car, left lane partially blocked. Don't have any delays to report to you yet on 17 southbound as you make your way into the Santa Cruz Mountains. Highway 1 a little slow in either direction near Highway 17. The Chevy Model Year-End Event is here. The last of the 06s are going fast. Claim yours before they're gone. See your local Northern California Chevy dealer today. I'm Larry Olson with traffic on KRXA 540.
Yeah, so stop trying. It's the Peter B. Collins Show, 22 minutes past the hour, as we continue with Ray McGovern, a great American who has stood up to tell the truth right in Donald Rumsfeld's face. Hey, Ray, last hour we were talking to Michael Scheuer, who worked at the CIA. I think your paths may have crossed a little bit. He's a very interesting guy and one of the most polite people I've ever met. One of the comments I put to him was a quote from Richard Armitage, Armitage saying that he thinks Hezbollah is the A-team of terrorists in his lexicon, and that Al-Qaeda is actually the B-team. How do you rank them?
Oh, that's the way I rank them. Yeah, I'd be interested in what Michael responded.
He said Armitage is all wet. He was.
Is that right?
That's what he said, yeah.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, Michael spent a career, or half a career at least, looking at Al-Qaeda, and I suppose that doesn't that could damage one's objectivity.
Yeah.
But in terms of worldwide assets and in terms of an ability to harm the United States and Israel, my impression is that Al-Qaeda plays second fiddle to
Well, his comment was that we know where Hezbollah lives, more or less, but if Al-Qaeda attacks us, you know, we have to search every cave in Afghanistan and Pakistan.
Yeah, so. Well, I'd have to respectfully disagree.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of order of magnitude. You see, Hezbollah is very, very different. It's partly a terrorist organization,
mm-hmm.
but it's a main political player in Lebanon.
Right.
Matter of fact, the only one that has any respect now among the Lebanese people. It's responsible for all manner of public civic establishments, including health services and social services. It has this one wing, which I certainly don't condone, this terrorist wing, but it has a basis, a political basis in a country, and it's actually part of the government. Parliamentarians and also people in the government itself. So,
got some callers. I've got some callers for you, Ray. First up, Dave in the Pinnacles. Hello, Dave. You're on the air.
Hi, Dave. Oh, hi, Peter B. Hey, I got the book that you sent me, Iraqi Confidential by Ritter, and it just seems like more evidence that with the CIA constantly in there, you know, with their jabs, that this whole thing has been orchestrated from the start. And what I wanted to ask your guest, you started talking about the USS Liberty, and I think one of the most telling things is that video testimonial of the captain and crew. Boy, that's just a real chiller, that one.
Yeah.
And anyways, what I'd like to ask you, back then we had, if memory serves me right, we had Barry Goldwater as the majority leader of the loyal opposition, the minority leader. And he was right in there complacent, facilitating the cover-up of the Liberty. Now we have these Democrats helping Bush cover up the 9-1-1 episode. Do you see a similarity in these two things? And do you believe that we have a secret government that's really running the show here? You know, I was on vacation up in Lassen last week, and I just happened to get into a talk with an old retired guy that was a DOD, you know, Department of Defense. He says this crap goes on, and he no more believes that pigs could fly, that the 9-1-1 thing is the way the government said it is.
All right, Ray, your comment?
Well, you've said a lot there. I think the salient aspect here is the effect of what happened with respect to the Liberty. Put yourself in Israel's position here, the government of Israel. The whole episode demonstrated beyond any reasonable doubt that they could literally get away with murder, like 34 murders in this case. And so what does that do? This is 1967. With the lobbying effort that they have funded, and there's a little joke here in Washington. There's a move afoot to make Israel the 51st state, but they've turned that down. Do you know why?
No, tell us.
Why?
Well, then they'd only have two senators.
So I like that.
Uh-huh. This is really not funny, as you know. It's very, very dangerous. And when you have the president pretty much saying that we will spring to Israel's defense automatically if it's threatened because they are our ally, and no one in this country seems to know that there is no treaty of alliance between the United States and Israel, that speaks volumes. In other words, Israel doesn't have to have a treaty. The president says there is one, and so this terribly dangerous tale is going to wag our dog into even more hostilities.
And there's a powerful piece at thenation.com right now written by Ari Berman. We hope to get him on the program soon, but he talks about the political influence of AIPAC on both Democrats and Republicans. Dave, thanks for your call. We jump now to Tom in Monterey. Hello, Tom. You're on the air.
Hi, hey, Tom. I really enjoy your show.
Thank you.
I just want to ask Ray about what is the strategic interest of Israel for the United States, and what is it costing us?
Well, last figures I saw was about $4 billion a year in terms of economic and military aid. It's a good question, Tom. Earlier on, when I was an analyst with the CIA, the Soviet Union was a big factor. And Israel was looked on as a beachhead in the Middle East. Well, the Soviets courted the Arabs, so we had pretty much a battleship right there with the State of Israel. I asked myself, after the Soviet Union sort of imploded, what the reality was now, but it didn't change. Our close identification with Israel is mostly a political thing. It's a function of a guilty conscience for what we didn't do during World War II. And a lot of us feel that guilt, a sort of a misguided perception of what the Bible says, namely that, doesn't it say that the Israelis are entitled to that land? And then all kinds of other things like Christian fundamentalism. So,
and Ray, let me stop you there. We're out of time. As always, I appreciate your contribution. I want to direct people to truthout.org, to the piece you wrote. Sadly, the plural of fiasco requires no E. Ray McGovern, we'll talk again soon.
Thank you, Peter B.
On the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
It's Behind the Wheel, the Consumer New Car Review. I'm Peter B. Collins. This week, I've been behind the wheel of the 2006 Suzuki Grand Vitara, a midsize SUV that seats five. With four-wheel drive and a 2.7-liter fuel-injected six-cylinder engine and a five-speed automatic, the Grand Vitara performed very well on a weekend drive to the coast. Good acceleration and passing power, easy to handle, quick to respond. My only complaint is that the four-wheel drive setup makes the steering a little tight at low speeds and requires a bigger turning radius. Inside, it's roomy and attractive with all the accessories you need, including a 6-CD changer with a subwoofer to annoy other drivers. Suzuki offers generous warranties and a great price. The mileage could be better. By the numbers, the 2006 Suzuki Grand Vitara gets 19 mpg in the city, 23 on the highway, and stickers in California for about $23,000. Behind the wheel, I'm Peter B. Collins.
Parents, do you need cash for college? This year, more than $100 billion is available for financial aid. Let AboutCollegeFunding.com help you navigate the complicated process to accessing your share of these funds. AboutCollegeFunding.com is now offering free one-hour consultations for parents in need of answers. To schedule your free one-hour consultation with RJ Moyet, call 1-888-337-9775. That's 1-888-337-9775.
Remember, the early bird gets the cash.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, host of the Tasty Planet radio show. Every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m., I explore the world of food, wine, and travel across the U.S. and around the world. I interview nationally known writers, winemakers, chefs, restaurateurs, brewers, and others that make our world so delicious. Join me and my guests every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m. for tasty news shows, or visit the Tasty Planet on the web by going to www.tastyplanet.org. Listen in and have a good appetite.
There are radio talk shows about sports, politics, money, sex, and religion. Now there's a talk show for parents and everyone else who cares for and about children. It's Childhood Matters, every Sunday from 9 to 10 a.m. here on KRXA 540. I'm the host, Rona Renner, the mother of four, a new grandmother, a nurse, and parent educator. Listen and call in Childhood Matters every Sunday from 9 to 10 here on KRXA 540.
I am attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school, when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience, who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no-obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am attorney Sean Mills.
Tom Hartman.
Resolution 1440 explicitly said that no force could be brought to bear on Iraq until either Hans Blix or Muhammad al-Baradei, one of the two weapons inspectors, had indicated that there were either weapons of mass destruction or evidence of weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. And only then could force be used against Iraq. And that never happened.
It's the Tom Hartman program.
So here's George Bush saying that we took out Saddam Hussein because he wouldn't let in the weapons inspectors. And it was Bush who pulled the weapons inspectors out.
Tom Hartman on KRXA 540.
And after another seemingly endless commercial break, the Peter B. Collins Show resumes. I'm glad you're listening. And maybe you're listening online. You can link up to our live daily stream at peterbcollins.com. The website's under construction. Sorry for the inconvenience. Coming up next hour, Larissa Alexandrovna returns to our program. She's the managing editor at rawstory.com. There's a lot to talk about. And now we welcome back the New York Times author, Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter, David K. Johnston, to our program. He's the author of the book Perfectly Legal, subtitled The Covert Campaign to Rig Our Tax System and Benefit the Super Rich and Cheat Everybody Else. David C.J., welcome back to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hi, Peter.
How are you doing today?
All right.
Well, good. Thanks for hooking up with us. I want you to know that this is fulfilling the wish of one Diane Salazar, who is a regular listener to our program, and she heard that we were trying to schedule you on, and she said she would hope she had hoped it would happen yesterday, which was her birthday.
Well, sorry, we're a day late.
Well, but probably not a dollar short, because you've been trying to watch the antics of the Internal Revenue Service. Tell us about the recent story that you broke in the New York Times about substantial cutbacks in the enforcement efforts of the IRS when it comes to the death tax.
Well, the IRS has been, since 2002, asserting that they are going to revitalize and reinvigorate law enforcement, which I had spent 5 or 6 years showing how they weren't enforcing the law. People were bragging, some of them out there in California, that they weren't paying taxes and nothing was happening to them. So the commissioner of the Internal Revenue Service has decided to eliminate almost half the jobs of the tax lawyers who audit estate tax returns. Now, at first blush, this might seem to make sense because, you know, we've reduced the number of people subject to the estate tax. Mm-hmm. President Bush and Congress have changed the law. The problem is that the number of people who they seriously audit, the people with estates of $5 million or more, they're growing in numbers.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's the second element of this, which is, well, all right, here are these folks who have all this experience, and you and I as taxpayers, Peter, have spent a fortune sending these people to training and developing the experience and the expertise they have dealing with people's efforts to understate their assets. And you'd think the government would say, well, you know, well, maybe we don't need them for estate taxes. Let's put them to work somewhere else.
Yeah.
Like maybe they could... the government says it wants to increase audits of people who make more than $1 million a year of income, and those mm-hmm. people tend to be people who own a lot of assets as opposed to wage earners.
Right.
Well, it turns out that these lawyers are not in civil service. And so the IRS asked the Office of Personnel Management, that's the people who run the civil service, well, can we get a waiver so we could move these people over? And they just simply didn't reply. However, as Frank Heffler, who's the president of the National Treasury Employees Union in New York City, that's the union that represents IRS workers, said, he said, it seems to me under President Bush's theory of executive power, if he can hold you in prison forever without a trial and can torture you, you would think that he'd have the authority to get a civil service rule waived.
You would think so.
And Mr. Heffler's conclusion from that is that they don't want this talent around. They want to hire new people who will, of course, take a number of years of training at a great deal of expense to you and I to learn the skills to do the job.
Yeah, but they'll come in at
high-income people.
They'll come in at GS-1 or something like that, and the taxpayers will save
more
a bundle.
Like a higher level, like an 11 or 12.
But, yeah.
It takes time. I mean, any job you do, it takes time to learn it, and here you have all this talent. You're going to, and furthermore, of course, there's a second message here. These folks are being, some of them have worked for the government now for 20 years, 25 years, but they're not eligible to retire because they're not old enough. And the government's given them about 10 weeks' notice and said at the end of that period, we're going to give you $25,000 maximum and go away.
Wow.
Now, these are folks who, you know, could have gone into other jobs, made other decisions about their lives, and I think there's sort of a message here. If you thought the deal when you went to work with the federal government was you might not get rich because you're not in the private sector, but you can, you know, count on a secure future,
mm-hmm.
which, of course, does not help recruit better people
right.
to audit tax returns of high-income people.
Now, David K. Johnston, what is it that drives you to want to pester the wealthiest Americans to pay their fair share of taxes? I mean, come on.
Well, Peter, I'm not pestering them. What I'm trying to do is the same thing I've done for 40 years. I try to identify issues that I don't think are being covered well by the news media. Okay, so 26 years ago, I started seriously covering, when I was at the Los Angeles Times, the LAPD. and showing how it really operated as opposed to its image. And taxes are at the core of our democracy. The subject is not generally well covered in the news media. It's mostly covered in terms of what politicians say they're doing, not how the system really works. And the fundamental thing that I found, and I had no idea this is what I would find when I went into this, the fundamental thing I found is that we have two tax systems in America.
Wait a minute, you sound like John Edwards.
Well, maybe he sounds like me. Two tax systems in America, separate and unequal. One system is for wage earners like you and me.
Yeah.
The government doesn't trust us. Congress doesn't trust you. So you have to have your wages reported by your employer. You have to have your taxes taken out of your check before you get them. You want to claim a child as a deduction, you better have a Social Security number. And if you're trying to get a tax credit, like the Earned Income Tax Credit, you may have to produce other things like letters from the superintendent of the building where your apartment is or report cards from teachers to get that money. On the other hand, if you are a business owner or a landlord or an investor, the government's position is we trust you to honestly report to us how much you owe in taxes. Well, you can imagine that not everybody is particularly punctilious about doing that.
Mm-hmm. So, David, what are the parameters over the last 5 years? Has there been an increase, no change, or a decrease in the number of audits performed? And have the changes reflected income categories? In other words, are they drilling in to audit $25,000 households instead of the $5 million households?
Well, that's a real good question, Peter. Back in, I think it was 99, I broke the story that you were more likely to be audited if you were poor than rich because Congress ordered the IRS to do this, and the only area they gave the IRS extra money was to audit poor people who worked. That's changed somewhat. Congress continues to give extra money every year. It's been well over $1 billion now to audit poor people, and yet at the end of the day, it turns out, you know, they're no more susceptible to problems than anybody else in the tax system. There has been an increase in the number of people being audited who have high incomes. It's not large, but there has been an increase. The problem is that numerous auditors across the country who've talked to me tell me that they're under pressure to do something that some of them, not all of them, call audit light, L-I-T-E, like light beer.
Sure.
Not filling. It is... go in, find some items, and close the paperwork.
Mm-hmm.
And I've actually talked to one auditor who does corporate work who wanted to go after what he felt was a $500 million of taxes that were owed. And his bosses would not let him. Now, of course, you know, it's like a street cop who wants to bring a crime and the DA says you don't have the evidence. It may be that he's wrong and that the material is not good enough and it's not worth their time. But consistently, I've been hearing from all but a handful of auditors I've talked to that when they find evidence of outright fraud, there's plenty of support. But when they run into people who have very complex strategies to reduce their taxes and who have aggressive lawyers and accountants who make it clear that they will fight the IRS and that they're going to be well paid to fight the IRS, and when supervisors happen to notice that, gee, this is somebody who's politically well connected, they start doing analyses that say it's really not worth it to go after this particular case, and they write up a report and they close the file.
Well,
this again goes to this issue of equal justice.
I have to say, David, I was selected for audits four times from 1987 to 1999, and I haven't heard from them in years.
Well,
maybe they just got tired of me. I don't know. They never really the worst audit I had. I had to give them an extra $150. The other three, I actually reclaimed money from the government in the process.
Well, Peter, that's one of the problems with the way they do the audit system now. About one third of the audits they do result in either no money to the government or the government giving somebody back money because they overpaid their taxes.
That's delicious.
And that just tells you that that's a system that's not picking the right targets.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the other problem. The government is sort of like a Star Trek computer. You know, the captain says, what do the sensors say about what's down on the planet? Oh, there's nothing there, Captain. They go down and there's something there because the sensors don't see it. Well, the IRS's computers are full of information about you that people report. And if you're a wage earner, they've got everything they need on you. But what if you're a business owner?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't have that information. They have what you told them. There's no independent third-party reporting on you. If you're a big investor, they get data that says you sold X amount of stock last year, but they don't know the price you paid for it. And so in that area alone, capital gains cheating, Jay Solid, a business school professor at Rutgers University, and some other scholars have concluded that there's about $29 billion a year of cheating in capital gains.
Mm-hmm.
Where people say they paid more for their stock than they did.
Yeah. Well, I'm a small business owner, and I report my income on Schedule C.
Yes.
And I have to say, Schedule C is a very good friend, because when you compare my ability to write off business expenses to somebody who is a W-2 withholding employee, it's dramatically different.
Absolutely. And it goes to this fundamental core concept that's in the tax law. You want a tax system that encourages investment and the growth of business and greases the wheel of commerce while raising the money we need to have a civilized society. We have to have police and roads and other things. So if somebody who's a wage earner goes out and buys a new computer, they have to earn that amount of money plus the taxes to get that amount of money. But if you have a Schedule C, you get to deduct the cost of the computer, so it costs you the cost of the computer minus the taxes.
Mm-hmm.
That is the way in which the system is biased towards building up assets.
Right.
And fundamentally, when I said we have two systems here, we very thoroughly tax people on their incomes from labor and other independently reported areas, but we don't on their assets.
Right.
And that's the real fundamental challenge to the system. And Congress is not, despite the report I wrote about this week about all the billionaire tax cheats and their naming some of them and the offshore activities, there's no, you know, it's a nice report, but Congress isn't doing anything to go after the very people who provide them with the money that keeps them in office.
Yeah, they're holding hearings, but I don't have a sense they're going to do anything about it. And as we continue, David, I want to talk about those issues and how the super rich avoid taxes so the rest of us carry a much heavier load. We'll continue in just a moment with David K. Johnston. The K is C-A-Y. David K. Johnston for the New York Times. He is a Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter. His most recent book out in softcover is called Perfectly Legal. If you have a question or comment, you can join us toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-5-PETER-B. 888-573-8372. Here at the Peter B. Collins Show. KRXA 540. Progressive Talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz.
Would you like to be part of a conversation that might not only inspire your golf game, but have you thinking differently about sports, about learning, and about performance? Join golf pro and best-selling author Fred Shoemaker on KRXA 540 Saturday mornings at 8 a.m. for Extraordinary Golf, some uncommon conversations about golf, and maybe even a little beyond golf. Extraordinary Golf, Saturday mornings on KRXA 540 at 8 a.m.
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized, attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. The Mexicali Grill is open daily for lunch from 11 to 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
Children's books, educational toys, and games your entire family will enjoy are always in season at locally owned and operated Thinker Toys. Hi, this is Nurse Rona of Childhood Matters. We know that our children learn by playing, and the caring staff at Thinker Toys will help you choose the ideal gift for toddlers through teens. Stop by our beautiful Carmel store at 7th and San Carlos and the just renovated Thinker Toys at Del Monte Center in Monterey. Thinker Toys is open daily.
afternoon. I'm Larry Olson with traffic on KRXA 540. Santa Cruz Mountains, South 17 after the summit. Accident, two cars involved. The right lane is now blocked. Prunedale Highway 156 at Cathedral Oak Road, two-car crash. It's been moved over to the right shoulder. Minor injuries have been reported. CHP is on scene. Southbound Highway 1 at Del Monte Boulevard in Marina, stalled car, left lane partially blocked. Northbound Highway 1 at Park in Capitola, solo spin out, that's on the right shoulder. South 101 at the 25 in Gilroy, tire in lanes. The Chevy model year-end event is here. The last of the 06s are going fast. Claim yours before they're gone. See your local Northern California Chevy dealer today. I'm Larry Olson with traffic on KRXA 540.
You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show, and I am your humble host, Taxpayer Collins.
There's one for you, 19 for me.
Leona Helmsley, who said, "Only little people pay taxes." And David K. Johnston is out there watching out for the little people in America. He's the Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter at the New York Times, and as we mentioned, his most recent book is called Perfectly Legal. And, David, the Senate has been holding hearings into the tax practices, the tax evasion practices of the super rich, and it makes for interesting fodder and might actually provide the backstory for a new soap opera, you know, like Dynasty or one of those, you know, where we watch the super rich and hope that we can become one of them. But describe for us some of the tactics that have been used by the wealthiest Americans to avoid paying tax, and the manner in which some of them are so cavalier that they don't even keep records, or they're not required to document it in the manner that a $25,000 a year household has to.
Well, here's what the Senate 400-page Senate report, which took like 5 man-years of work to put together, says was done by a group of billionaires in this country, and they named several of them in the report. Peter, I'm going to give you $1,000 on paper. A piece of paper says I've given you $1,000, and you're going to give me back a piece of paper that loans me back the $1,000 at no interest,
mm-hmm.
and says that whatever the future price is of the stock of American Widget Company, I can get that stock from you at that price. Okay?
Great
deal. You don't own that stock, by the way.
Uh-huh.
Well, the stock goes to zero because it's a company that was going out of business.
Right.
And so then I take a tax deduction because you're going to pay me the price of that, and you paid me zero. And I deduct that money.
Mm-hmm.
That's what these guys did. They took $9.6 billion worth of stock they didn't own that they had, quote, economic rights to, end quote,
mm-hmm.
and sold it when it dropped in value to just about zero. Now, that's a pretty good trick.
That really is. Now, are these economic rights like options?
Well, that's the assertion, but nobody apparently owned the stock. Now, the people who designed this deal insist that they were within the letter of the law, and by golly, they've got 100-page opinions from lawyers saying that they're within the law.
But did they get an IRS tax letter regarding this particular dodge?
Well, two of these gentlemen, the owner of the New York Jets, Robert Wood Johnson IV, as in Johnson & Johnson, the big pharmaceutical company.
My man Woody.
Right. And Hames, I guess it's pronounced Saban, the man who brought us the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers,
right,
told Congress that they're victims here. They each had these huge gains. In the case of Mr. Saban, I think it was about $2 billion, $1.5 billion, and these lawyers told them they wouldn't have to pay any taxes if they just paid about $65 million between the two of them in fees. They could eliminate $300 million of taxes, and the IRS had a different view, and they feel that they were misled and mistreated by these lawyers. They're very, very smart men, I guess, but when it comes to taxes, their minds turn to the wisdom of kindergartners.
Yeah, yeah. And will that work? Can they blame their attorneys?
Well, it'll be interesting to see whether they sue them. In a number of the tax shelter cases going on, people are trying to recover from the accounting firms. And I don't believe any of these civil cases have come to trial. Some of them have been settled with payments. And usually with confidentiality agreements, which is one of the unfortunate things about our court system, that, you know, we allow people to sign settled cases after they've run through the taxpayer-funded court system and then lock everything up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What about the Weil brothers? They showed up in your reporting.
The Wiley brothers, who own, among other businesses, Michael's Stores, the craft stores.
Oh, yeah. What awful.
These are two guys who grew up dirt poor in the Depression in Louisiana and are some of the smartest businessmen in America. I mean, they are really talented guys. But their position is that they were able to take stock options from this company they controlled and others, trade them to an entity offshore in the Isle of Man, which has bank secrecy laws,
right,
and take back a promise of future payment to them of an annuity. Then the options were exercised, and real cash money was put on deposit over there in the Isle of Man. And then whenever they needed money, they would write emails saying, please send us, you know, $36 million, $50 million, $15 million, $4 million, whatever it was there the kids needed, you know, to buy jewelry and boats and airplanes and in some cases and reinvest in their businesses.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, well, we don't owe any taxes on that money because we borrowed it.
There's always a way
and
out.
And they insist, of course, that they did nothing wrong either.
Let's take a call. Jay in Monterey, you're on the Peter B. Collins Show with David K. Johnston.
Hi, thank you. David, I'm a big fan, so first let me say I wish you had your own radio talk show, and I wish you would run for president just to publicize these issues.
I think I'd be terrible at the second one, and the first one I started out in radio and decided that wasn't my thing.
Well, I just
so I started out there in Santa Cruz, actually.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Where did you work?
I was some sports announcing for KSCO, I guess it was called.
It's still there. It's now a right-wing talk station, but it's still there.
Yeah, that's where I grew up in Santa Cruz. Anyway, so what's your question?
Okay, so I want to ask you about the flat tax. People talk about a flat tax every so often, and part of me just goes, you know, that would really be simple, because anytime you have nuances, somebody's going to take advantage of it. So if there would, what do you think of the idea of a flat tax? But there'd have to be documentation for all this stuff you're saying the rich people aren't documenting. Does that make any sense, that idea?
Well, here's how the flat tax works. You will pay taxes on your wages under the flat tax. So will anybody else who has wages.
Uh-huh.
But Steve Forbes, the promoter of the flat tax, he'll never pay taxes again.
Hmm.
Because under the flat tax, whatever assets you own, you get to write off entirely immediately the first year. So imagine for a minute that, you know, you'd picked your parents a little differently, and you're Steve Forbes.
Yeah, I'll work on that one.
You got $1 billion worth of assets here in a business that you own directly. This doesn't work, by the way, if you're and me and you buy stock.
Okay.
You have to own the business. So here's your tax return. Income I spent during the year, $10 million. Value of my business, minus $1 billion.
Mm.
Net position of the government, $990 million negative. But it gets better. Or is what's that radio line? But there's more. The next year, you get to adjust that $990 million up for inflation. And then you spend your $11 million the next year. You deduct your $1,100 million. Now you only have $999 million negative hole.
Wow.
And you still don't owe any taxes. The flat tax will not eliminate any of the fundamental problems we have in the tax system. Now, there are a lot of people across the board, liberal, dyed-in-the-wool, progressive Democrats, and libertarians and Republicans all who are talking about maybe we need to change the tax system. Forbes magazine recently raised the question of should we go to a carbon tax? Because how much carbon you consume is a pretty good measure of your wealth, just as in the very first tax we had in the federal tax in America was a property tax. Because in a farming society, how much land you own is a measure of how wealthy you are and therefore how much you can afford to pay in taxes.
Well,
and now the Forbes people didn't know what they were talking about because they thought you tax carbon by the pound. You tax it by the BTU. A pound of coal is not a pound of gasoline.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But nonetheless, that idea is around. And I think we're going to see more and more discussion by serious people in the tax game about whether the income tax is still the best way to do this.
Jay, thanks a lot for your call. We're out of time here. David K. Johnston, thank you for joining us. Always a pleasure. Keep up the good work, will you?
Thank you, Peter.
All right. We'll talk to you again. The book, Perfectly Legal, it's out in paperback. Coming up next, Larissa Alexandrovna joins us for the hour here on...
Hey, it's Sheila Gale with great news. I have a new time slot. Reality Radio can be heard every Saturday afternoon now from 4 to 5. So keep it right here, AM 540, for extraordinary progressive talk. With me, Sheila Gale, number one in reality radio. There's nothing we won't talk about. Saturdays, 4 to 5 p.m., sponsored in part by Primerica Financial Services. Call Joe and Phyllis at the Marina office for your free consultation. See you Saturday on KRXA.
Politicians may come and go, but for the past 33 years, Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey. Technically proficient, Dr. Turner specializes in listening to every patient's concerns and feelings. And because Dr. Turner cares about you, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112, 831-375-1112, 815 Cass Street in downtown Monterey. For all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner, 375-1112. He listens, he cares.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News. I'm Harley Carnes. We have been talking about this sweltering heat for days now as a huge bubble of sizzle has walked across the nation like a giant hovering magnifying glass.
Power companies say repair crews are working overtime in blistering conditions to keep air conditioners running. But Pepco's Debbie Jarvis says the relentless heat is taking a toll.
It's almost like running a car 100 miles an hour, 24/7, that eventually, yes, there is some stress that affects the electrical mechanical system.
The summer scorcher has also been deadly. Since the onslaught of 100-degree temperatures began in California 2 weeks ago, more than 150 people have died from oppressive heat.
CBS's Bob Orr there. In New York City, Con Ed set a record for electricity demand today. Tropical Storm Chris expected to become a hurricane by Friday.
A little bit of an effect in the atmosphere could either strengthen it significantly or weaken it significantly. The smaller the storm, the more susceptible they are to intensity changes.
WFOR-TV's meteorologist Brian Norcross. Where is Chris going?
Strong high pressure over the east coast of the U.S. that will hold Chris to the south, probably push it toward the Gulf of Mexico eventually in some form.
As for the new hurricane season, and it appears to be getting truly underway, officials in Louisiana have shut down the center focused on finding people missing after Katrina. 136 people remain unaccounted for. Israeli tanks and troops ever on the move in southern Lebanon, and both the Prime Minister and the Army Chief of Staff said today no ceasefire is possible until an international, multinational military force has moved into place to maintain a protective buffer zone. Until then. So despite the words and the actions of those actually involved in the fighting, the U.S. State Department puts on a confident face about ceasefire.
Whatever differences in approach there are, they're really narrowing down to the point where we expect that we can get action in the Security Council in the coming days.
That's spokesman Sean McCormick. The charges are in for Mel Gibson. Jane Robinson at the L.A. County DA's office.
He is facing up to 6 months in county jail. That's a potential maximum for the misdemeanor charge.
It's said to be one of the greatest scenic views on the west coast of Ireland. Wide, panoramic, breathtaking, unspoiled. Well, maybe not unspoiled. A ramshackle old outhouse sits there, and that little plot of land is for sale. $384,000, enough to buy a home in Ireland, is the asking price. But they say the view is worth it. On Wall Street, the Dow gained 74 points today to close at nearly 11,200. The Nasdaq gained almost 17 points. Oil prices hit $75.81 a barrel, up about 90 cents on the day. This is CBS News.
Hey, how come you always get to pick the paint color?
Okay, what color do you want to paint?
I don't know. What do you think?
It's the Home Makeover event at Sherwin-Williams. This Thursday through Monday, save 25% on our high-quality paints and stains, 15% on Duration Premium Coatings, and save an extra 25% on Easy Change wallpaper patterns, too. Hurry, sale ends Monday.
Ask Sherwin-Williams.
For locations, visit SherwinWilliams.com. Some exclusions apply.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. 40 million Americans suffer from allergies, 17 million from asthma, 37 million from sinus infections. Here's the thought. Change the air you breathe. An Orrick Professional Air Purifier completely renews the air in an average-sized room every 10 minutes. Try it free for 90 days. Call 1-800-989-4200. That's 1-800-989-4200.
Measles was gone, and then someone brought it back into the U.S.
5 years after the U.S. declared measles had been eliminated here, 34 people got sick from them in Indiana. An unvaccinated teen returning from Romania caused the outbreak. A New England Journal of Medicine study warns it could happen again. CDC researcher Amy Parker.
It's important to maintain high levels of vaccination coverage. The virus is a plane ride away.
Vanderbilt preventive medicine expert Dr. William Schaffner.
If you're planning to go abroad to an area where there's a lot of measles, get a second dose.
The study says healthcare workers and homeschooled children also need more vaccination protection. Barry Bagnetto, CBS News, Washington.
Police in eastern England are setting up a prayer watch to help fight crime. The Lincolnshire branch of the Christian Police Association wants Christians to pray for the capture of criminals. The association director and former cop Don Axel says it makes a difference, as he's seen it happen too many times to chalk it up to coincidence. Harley Carnes, CBS News.
If you want someone to tell you what you want to hear, we're not the place. But if you want someone to tell it like it is, come to Match.com.
You need to start making some different decisions and embracing some different strategies to get what you want.
Match.com is working with Dr. Phil, and our members are loving his insight. We'll show you who. He'll show you how. So come see what Match.com can do for you. Match.com, the number one site for love.
CompUSA email bag.
Today, Jack emails, Dear CompUSA, got any deals for a starving student? Yeah, Jack. Now through Saturday, we're giving away $10,000 every day. Plus, we've got hundreds of killer deals, like $280 off a compact laptop with AMD Turion 64 processor. It's under $500 after rebates. So get to CompUSA's back-to-school sale, because we got it, we get it. No purchase necessary, void or prohibited, store visit required. See store for details.
And we continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. I'm your humble host, Peter B. I'm glad you're listening. It's 6 minutes past the hour. And this note from Homeland Security. Carl Rove is not responsible for the interruption to the Peter B. Collins Show that is about to occur in Eureka, California. KGOE listeners are going to be treated to another Crabs baseball game. It's the last one of the season. So in just about 3 or 4 minutes, we'll be switching off in Eureka. And if you'd like to stay with the program, you can log on to your computer. Go to peterbcollins.com. There's a link to our stream. Or you can go to our flagship station, krxa540.com, and pick it up there. And I will warn you that somewhere along the way this hour, we're going to get a live report from our Tommy Panic. We dispatched him to the Inn at Spanish Bay there in the Pebble Beach complex near Monterey to the Rupert Murdoch News Corporation confab that has featured a parade of political stars. Tony Blair, Bill Clinton, Al Gore, Newt Gingrich, and Bono was there. And Tommy tells me he's got the goods. I don't have any details, but sometime this hour when you least expect it, we'll have a panic attack here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Joining us for the hour today after a week off, and well-deserved, is hard-working managing editor from RawStory.com, Larissa Alexandrovna. Hello, Larissa.
Hello, how are you?
Good to talk to you again. How's it going?
Good. Last time we talked, I was mobile.
Yes, you were. It was raining on a night in New York City. You were in the Village somewhere.
Yeah, that's true. I was in the Village trying to talk above traffic about the attack. That's actually when the Israeli-Lebanon conflict had started.
That's right. Yeah.
Right. So that's how long it's been, actually. It hasn't been a week. It's been about two.
Well, you have been missed. A note came in from Hillary in Humboldt County. She says, I always appreciate Larissa's weekly visits. Miss her when she isn't there or when our radio station cuts out for a baseball game like today. Larissa would be simply entertaining with her style of intrigue, yet she is offering so much, page two, more with her special way of seeing. She leaves no stone unturned, and what she sees is deadly serious.
Oh, that's nice.
They're on to you, Larissa.
Are they?
Yeah.
Well, thank God at least the good guys are on to me now. Hint, hint, nudge, nudge.
Well, I want to open up the phone lines, and if you have a question or a comment, Larissa has agreed to stay with us for this entire hour today. There's so much to talk about. I want to get her take because, as you know, she has been working very hard on Middle East issues, particularly the focus on Iran of the Bush administration in the first portion of this year, and I'm looking forward to hearing your thoughts on what's going on there right now. So, lines are open if you'd like to talk with me or Larissa. You can pick one. You can call us at 888-5-PETER-B. That's our new toll-free number, 888-5-PETER-B or 888-573-8372. And, Larissa, here's where I'd like to start. The current conflict in the Middle East is complicated, and a lot of people's biases show in the entry point that they choose to describe the conflict. And some people go back to 1947, some people go back to 1967, and some people just go back to 3 weeks ago and say, well, you know, Israel was provoked, and therefore this response is fully justified. Where do you think the point of entry should be for a rational discussion about the conflict we have there today?
Well, I think a good rational discussion, you know, certainly would involve the geopolitical history, but clearly that, you know, that requires a great deal of, I mean, you'd have to go to a university for 4 years to get a good grasp of that. I think for what's going on now, I think the point of entry is this administration's entry into the White House and the policies to rearrange the Middle East as they see fit.
The PNAC plan.
The PNAC plan, the corporatist plan, it's a fairly aggressive, and, you know, I've always maintained that Iran was the focal point. I have been screaming off the, you know, pages saying, look, Iran is where we're going. And I think the last, maybe one, not the last time we talked, but the time before that, I'd written a story that, you know, essentially the Pentagon has recreated the Office of Special Plans,
yeah,
which, if you remember, was the body within the Defense Department that cooked up intel to get us into war.
Yeah, we haven't talked about OSP since last hour when Ray McGovern was with us. So.
Did you ever remember Ray McGovern?
Yeah.
You know, I should talk to him sometime. And now we have an Iranian directorate that literally is the same thing as the Office of Special Plans. Same people, minus the few who have been indicted or resigned.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be, what, two people, Fife and Franklin. Franklin was indicted in the AIPAC case.
Right.
And Fife has gone on to teach at a university.
Georgetown, yeah.
Right, exactly. But now we have this, but we essentially have the same makeup, the same ideology, the same push, and we even have the same people making the same trips abroad to meet. And yet somehow no one seems to be connecting the pieces. Now, I don't know if you remember, but I one of my reports on this whole building a port toward Iran, I think it was in March, I believe, I had reported that we had essentially the vice president's office has essentially squashed any attempt at any negotiations with Iran, any agreements of any sort, to the point where even having discussions with the Iranians is considered to be a weakness. And to that extent, the vice president has retained the services of Gurbanifar, who, as you know, mm-hmm, and your listeners know, was an Iran-Contra arms dealer who was also meeting in Rome and in Paris to help with the Defense Department and the Office of Special Plans with various activities mm-hmm, abroad. Anyway, some people think he's an Israeli spy. I think he's just simply an arms dealer. And so our vice president has retained his services to surveil, and this was several months back, any negotiations that the ambassador to the U.S. ambassador to Iraq, Zalmay Khalilzad,
mm-hmm,
may initiate or have with the Iranian side. In other words, he's spying on his own ambassador because he's that concerned that, you know, accidentally somehow a deal might be brokered or negotiations might start.
And back in May, Khalilzad was given a limited portfolio to engage in dialogue, bi-party talks with Iran, but limited to the issues of Iraq.
Correct. Well, the implication was that the Iranians were the insurgents in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, you know, there's such a, and you want to talk about melting pot, it left a void for every, there's a, maybe 20 terrorist organizations now in there from all sorts of nations. And so to kind of pin it on Iran, although I don't doubt that there's some Iranian activity, you know, it's truly bizarre. It failed. It didn't matter. It failed.
Mm-hmm.
Then the big push came around May, that they had weapons of mass destruction. There was all this activity. People started, top brass started threatening to resign, and all this activity with aircraft carriers that mm-hmm. we haven't seen since Vietnam started to take shape. And there was a lot of concern expressed. And at that time, the concern was that we were going to actually nuke Iran sometime spring of 2007.
Mm-hmm.
But as the WMD argument didn't take, it started to kind of flounder a little bit, and the pressure was off. Sometime around May or June, I began reporting, and essentially this is where we're still at, that sometime this summer, that is now, or fall, we will engage Iran directly.
Mm-hmm.
And, the issue had been, what would be the trigger? And some people had argued there has to be evidence of WMD. And as I said, there was a push for that, but that didn't really take. And the UN Security Council didn't really, go batty over it. So,
well, not only that, Russia and China made
sure.
it clear that they wouldn't support any kind of sanctions against Iran on that basis.
Right, but then what we did was we bypassed the Security Council and we went to European banks and institutions and imposed sanctions without the blessing of the UN Security Council. So we had already started activity. Plus, last year we had started using a terrorist organization called the MEK in the south of Iran. Essentially, we had trained them and we were using them for they were responsible for assassinations, but because they were being trained in our camps, the feeling there is that we were using them as a proxy to take out certain Iranian officials and destabilize the region. So by all accounts, it would appear that on the back end, we were very much, very actively engaged in provoking, in some cases, in other cases, actually, committing or affiliated with those who are committing acts of terror there. So with all of that in mind, and we know, my sources keep saying this is the time frame. When the Israeli-Lebanon conflict began, immediately my first thought was this is the trigger. I had long suspected that Israel would be the trigger. I just couldn't figure out how. And
mm-hmm.
this kidnapping of these two soldiers, which Hezbollah has not denied. They did do that, in fact.
Can we use the term capture?
Well, at this point, kidnap or capture.
See, kidnap is what would happen to a civilian. I believe that, somebody
yeah.
who is in uniform and on duty,
right.
who is captured in what became a combat situation,
right.
I don't consider that a kidnap for ransom. They did take them into custody,
well,
they're hoping
ransom.
To trade them. But,
well, that's a ransom.
Well, but...
And plus, the people who kidnapped them are not officially military. They're a militia of their own. They're in
right.
a cell. But
okay, I got to go to a break. We'll pick up there as we return with Larissa Alexandrovna. Your calls and comments are welcome. She's with us this whole hour, and you can call right now. Toll free at 888-5-PETER-B. That's 1-888-5-PETER-B. 888-573-8372. We'll continue in just a moment right here on the Peter B. Collins Show. ¶¶ The Peter B. Collins Show continues. You can join us 1-888-5-PETER-B.
Those who start wars never fight them. Those who fight wars, they never like them. They can recite them. And those of us who just fight laws, we live and die them.
That's from a new CD called Yell Fire from Michael Franti and Spearhead. The tune is called Time to Go Home.
Never gonna tell you why, no. They only wanna tell you lies, no. Never gonna tell you why.
And we continue with Larissa Alexandrovna. She's with us for this full hour. She's the managing editor of RawStory.com. And Larissa, I wanted to pick up where we left off just before the break, and I'm not being argumentative for its own sake, but I guess I have some skepticism about the initial events that occurred. And there is a compilation of what are alleged news accounts from various sources, from Forbes magazine to the Bahrain News Agency and French Yahoo, that indicate on the 12th of July that the Israeli soldiers were actually captured inside Lebanese territory. And I realize that that's not the claim of Hezbollah, and it's also not consistent with the Israeli version of events. And
right.
I was not there, and I don't know exactly what happened. I only raised that to raise the question, not necessarily as proof. But it gets back to the language that is being used to define and describe these events.
Right.
And because of the disproportionate response from Israel, in my view, this claim of kidnapping of Corporal Gilad in Palestine and the two soldiers in Lebanon or Israel, depending on whose report you take, I'm just skeptical because I would like to see independent verification of exactly, you know, who shot first and how these things occurred. And that's why I'm a little sensitive to that term kidnap, because I just feel that soldiers who are on duty are basically fair game. And that to capture them is, you know, not kidnapping. It's not the same.
Well, I use the term for, if it makes you feel better, for both sides. For example, I believe it was either the day or a few days before, Israel had kidnapped two Palestinian citizens, I believe a doctor and his brother, and some believe that this was retaliation for that. So it's not that I'm taking sides, although I do agree with you that Israel's response is, and this is where I get sort of uncomfortable with the concept of proportional response. I think any time there's death, it's out of proportion. But this is clearly an exaggerated response. And I think, instead of focusing, and with all due respect on the word kidnapping, as I said, I apply to both sides.
Yeah, and to be fair, when Israel, for example, detained most of the members of the Palestinian parliament who represent Hamas, they don't refer to that as kidnapping, but gosh, they took them into custody and held them against their will.
Right, and see, for me, kidnapping is kidnapping. If you take somebody against their will and hold them, you know, we can use the word capture, we can argue semantics. But, no, a point well taken, and certainly I agree with your assessment of the situation in terms of the reaction. The fact is that, at least from what I've been told, and I've spent, you know, supposedly this week off, which wasn't remotely a week off, on the phone, and with people who would be in a position to know, and there's no question that the Hezbollah account is what happened. It meshes well with the Israeli account. I had suspected initially that since we were using, and again, I have to be careful, since we're affiliated with an organization that is a terrorist organization that we've trained in and is operating either with or without our permission in Iran now.
That's the MEK.
Right. I had initially thought that the MEK false flagged this, meaning they had staged it to appear that it was Hezbollah, because Hezbollah hasn't attacked Israel in ages.
Yeah.
And why now? And what was the, you know, that's the kind of lead I was following. But no, in fact, it was Hezbollah, and that did occur. And they were looking to swap. But here's the thing. It doesn't matter what Hezbollah did or did not do. This plan was on the table for quite some time.
Correct.
And in June, is my understanding, and I don't know if this has been reported, because frankly, for me to be, you know, have a week off means that I'm not reading anybody else's news. I'm simply calling around. But it may have been covered. I don't know. But I'm told that the vice president had given Israel a green light in June.
Well, and the San Francisco Chronicle reported that that Israel had an action plan. Now, it's not clear whether it was a contingency plan or just one awaiting the right moment.
Right.
But they did have a significant plan for the military action that has unfolded over the last 21 days.
Well, I mean, I don't think it's a contingency plan, just like the concept of we're really interested in diplomacy with Iraq or Iran, and then we set up these offices to subvert those very statements.
Larissa, gotta go to another break. Sorry. We'll be right back with Larissa Alexandrovna. You can call us 1-888-5-PETER-B, and I feel a panic attack coming on shortly. Collins Show continues. I'm glad you're listening. It's 33 minutes past the hour. And we continue our conversation with Larissa Alexandrovna. She's the managing editor of RawStory.com. It's a great website with some tremendous coverage. Some items that are up there right now include George W. Bush slamming Sam Donaldson, not only for his bad toupee, but calling him a has-been. Interesting development today, too, about there are two different fronts related to the 9/11 Commission, Larissa.
Oh, yeah.
The Washington Post story that indicates that Governor Kaine had serious questions about whether the Pentagon had been honest with the 9/11 Commission about what went on there. And, of course, we've had suspicions about that for a long time.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to see that corroborated. Also, there's a report that is posted at Raw Story about some new tapes. Vanity Fair magazine has gotten tapes from NORAD, right?
Right, that's correct.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually run the tapes with the article. It's fairly long, but I suggest everyone read it. Have you read it yet?
I have not. No, I'm going to look at that tonight.
It was very disturbing. In fact, just to make clear how secretive this entire process was, I had a very high-level regional chief for the CIA of a particular region call me up, literally screaming, saying, "Have you seen this? This is, I can't believe they did this."
Mm-hmm.
And what this is that essentially they lied. They lied about, and certainly one can understand if you've messed up this badly, you'd want to cover your tracks. But to the extent that they lied, is incredibly disturbing, because it really changes the timeline of events, and it really does show that certain people needed to be demoted, if not completely fired,
mm-hmm.
and possibly prosecuted at the very least for criminal negligence.
Yeah.
So there's a problem, and the other issue that really stood out for me when I was reading the NORAD transcripts. It's almost like the executive branch was missing. They just didn't exist. Nobody could get a hold of them. And then, I don't know if you remember, but the vice president, discussed a great deal with a lot of emotion how he had been, it was very difficult for him to make the decision about whether or not to shoot down Flight 93.
Right.
And now we find out that he was only notified about the whole kit and caboodle roughly a minute or so before Flight 93 went down.
Mm-hmm.
So how much time did he actually have to really sit there and make these heart-wrenching choices? That's clearly a lie. And whatever reason, whether to make himself look like a caring person or whatnot, it really is incredibly disingenuous and manipulative and really insulting. And, having lived in that area, having been directly affected by the events of 9/11,
yeah.
I found it incredibly insulting. And then when you couple that with the fact that a criminal investigation was requested and that nobody said this publicly.
Yeah.
They referred it to the Justice Department, and that's it. And no one talked about it.
Well, and it is interesting. Governor Kaine's going public with this now. He's willing to be quoted on it. But
everyone now knows.
Well, but he was so proud at the time to tell us that this was a unanimous report. There was no dissent. And what it means is that they paved over these issues, very serious issues, about whether the Pentagon had cooperated and told the truth.
Well, clearly the Pentagon had lied, but I wouldn't say it was the Pentagon that lied. There was something very bizarre going on that day that didn't. When you read this, it's like there's three different storylines. There's
mm-hmm.
the actual, normal day-to-day life of, people going places and getting on planes and flying around. So that's story A. Then there's the overlay of the exercises that were going on that day that literally tied up much of NORAD anyway, and certainly the air defense, the actual planes. And, you're familiar with the war games that went on that day.
I am, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then, so that's like story B. And then story C is the real world parallel that literally, you know, was paralleling what was going on in the exercises, because some of the exercises had to do with hijacked airliners.
That's right.
So at some point, you're reading this and you can see why everyone's confused, because nobody knows what anyone's referring to. The problem is that there was this sort of disregard, like a missing leadership who didn't step in and say, hey, shut down the war games now.
Right.
FAA, get everyone down on the ground now.
And that's what feeds all the doubts and all the questions and the skepticism about the official story of 9/11. And we don't know how far it will unravel, but we need to unravel it.
I don't know what happened. Okay, I don't think, maybe someone does.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the problem. What scares me is I don't know what happened. And not because I have a theory, I don't. I simply don't understand how what has been given us is in any way logical.
Yeah.
Because it defies the laws of physics to begin with, and then moves from there. And what I want to know is, why is no one explaining this to me, a rational person, in a way that isn't nonsense?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah. Larissa, stand by. We've got a live report coming in right now. We'll return to you in just a second. Our in-depth, undercover, low-budget investigative reporter, Tommy Panic, was dispatched to the Inn at Spanish Bay in the Pebble Beach complex near Monterey to investigate Rupert Murdoch's News Corporation confab featuring Bubba Bill Clinton, Al Gore, Tony Blair, Bono of U2, and even Newty Gingrich. Tommy, how you doing?
Peter, I'm doing well. I've been quite busy. It was quite the to-do here, quite the pantheon of world leaders, minus the president, of course. But, since I got back from Cuba, I had to spend about a week here on the peninsula, and I integrated into the golf community and was hired on as a caddy here.
Oh, beautiful.
At Pebble Beach. I caddied over at Poppy Hills, at Spanish Hill here, even over at Cypress, where you got to prove your ancestors came over on the Mayflower, practically, if you want to join that place.
Yeah.
But this was amazing. I can't even believe I cleared security for this thing, but I had what I thought was going to be the pleasure of caddying for our 42nd president.
You did?
Yeah, Bill Clinton.
Wow.
But, as it turns out, Sherpa-ing Dick Cheney, Karl Rove, and a few more fat guys up Everest would have been easier. I mean, this guy was all over the place, and then every bit the liberal when it came to scoring.
I bet.
I mean, and you got to realize, on this course, there was a lot of ice plant early on, and it pilfered many of his balls on the first few holes, and pretty good shots that he was hitting, but they just went gone because of that ice plant, and could have been some black hole or some golf void, or could have even been the ghost of Robert Trent Jones punishing the former president for hacking up his defining course. I don't know.
Just one correction there. I met Bob Jones last year. He's still alive.
He is?
Yeah.
I think this is senior.
Oh, okay.
Might have been senior.
I see. Okay.
Yeah. So different Mr. Jones.
Now, does Clinton play golf with, sucking on an unlit cigar?
Nah.
No?
Not really. He's, he had several Bloody Marys. This was early in the day. And again, I'm caddying for the guy. I'm counting up 7, 8 shots. And it's like, well, what'd you get, sir? Par. Really?
Uh-huh.
I mean, just from improving his lies to shaving shots to blaming the wind, it was really unbelievable. I counted up about 114 strokes.
Wow.
For the former president, and he had an 82.
Uh-huh.
So there were some discrepancies.
We call that a surplus.
That sounds good.
That's good. A Clinton surplus.
The only other guy that golfed of everyone that came here was Sir Richard Branson.
Oh,
the Virgin Airlines guy.
Sure.
He was in the house, and
yeah.
I mean, he was proposing we colonize the moon to the point where the ultra wealthy would pay huge cash to live there, which was kind of weird. And he hit the links with these real futuristic clubs, kind of reminiscent of Al Cervic, the Rodney Dangerfield character on Caddyshack. And amazingly, he shot a 48.
Wow.
He was 22 under par, so the clubs got it done. And, you know, I realized, Peter, that these were the only two guys that were going to golf, so I had to get resourceful, basically. Not like MacGyver where I'm making some sort of an explosive out of, like, a turnip and a toothpick. But I had to get into the lodge and to get into that food system, and I did. I was able to serve as a busboy at the lodge in Pebble Beach. I was the guy in charge of the dinner rolls, so I was really able to observe quite a bit. Tony Blair, for instance. In California, first serving prime minister to actually visit our state, number 43's lapdog, as some would say, our reluctant ally at this point. You know, I really get the point from Mr. Blair that all he was really doing here was setting up for life after politics, really really watching Bill Clinton and Al Gore and what these guys do. Really
well,
wants to be ready when it's all over.
I read a report last week that Murdoch has offered Blair a job when he finishes with this government stuff.
Yeah, I think he's going to make a lot of money over here in the States. But and, of course, Blair making news with Arnold Schwarzenegger. The governor believes in global warming, or claims he does for political reasons, but unlike a lot of the elephants in Washington. But they made news, I'm sure, as you saw, for bypassing Washington and the administration on that emissions deal. And, of course, California, the seventh largest economy, the world's 12th largest producer of greenhouse gases. So that's interesting. It's certainly a shrewd political move for Schwarzenegger.
I agree with that.
And let's see, a couple other. I mean, we saw Bono, of course, always wearing those funky glasses. Wouldn't you think, Peter, that you know, when you're meeting heads of state, you'd take off the funky glasses? But he doesn't.
Never?
No. There they are. And of course, this capped it all off, was just seeing Al Gore. Al Gore is a movie star now.
Right.
This guy's got like a posse. This guy's got an entourage following him around. He's got people. I mean, and all you could do is look at him and say, where the hell was that guy in the year 2000? It's like a completely different guy.
It does seem like it, yeah.
Yeah, and of course, absent George Bush, but a lot of talk of him leaving the trail of blood in the Middle East. But hey, he cares about fetuses and embryos.
That's right. Yeah, it's a culture of life. You got to preserve it.
Yeah. So I have some assignments to go do some other reporting, but I'm honestly really happy just going out here and caddying on these golf courses. It's really not a. I mean, I feel like I live in a little bit of a bubble, but I might be here for a couple weeks.
Well, dig in and enjoy it, Tommy, because I was afraid you were actually going to pay greens fees and then submit the expense report, and that probably would have clobbered me.
I'm way more resourceful than that, Peter.
All right.
Give me a break.
Tommy Panic from Pebble Beach, the Inn at Spanish Bay. Thanks for joining us today.
We'll talk to you.
Appreciate your work. Coming up next, we go back to Larissa Alexandrovna, and we've got a caller on the line who's listening online from the nation's capital. We'll go to that call coming up next, right here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Thank you.
And the Peter B. Collins Show continues. We're in the home stretch here this afternoon. You're welcome to call with a question or comment for Larissa Alexandrovna from RawStory.com. My toll-free number is 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-5-PETER-B. And we're joined now by Mike in Washington, D.C. Good evening, Mike. Welcome to the show.
Good evening. It's nice to be there.
Thanks for calling.
We're here, too. I wanted to ask Larissa, first I wanted to compliment her for the great article exposing the Holland Tunnel plot.
Thanks.
Just a bunch of baloney. And that was a really quick turnaround, and I'm sure it made a lot of people happy in my former hometown, New York City. What's it like working in this world with people like this as sources and as targets for your investigation? It must be awfully strange and stressful at times.
Yeah, it's not normal, that's for sure. It's like it's a bizarre world because intelligence is the rules are different. There are people who are principled and they can be completely criminal, and yet they're principled and somehow the good guys, and then there are people who are completely clean but are the bad guys, and it's surreal to an extent that's very frightening at times. And the other aspect is that you also become a target for people who do not particularly like what you're writing about.
Mm-hmm.
And because you're in the world that you're in, they can speak to you through various methods to let you know in a not-so-subtle way that to back off a story.
Mm-hmm.
So it is very stressful. But, you know, I'll tell you something. It's incredibly intriguing. It's like a science project. If I could just simply sit, you know, as a fly on the wall and watch, that would be my ideal, because truly, this is like a whole other planet with its own sort of makeup and rules and everything.
And you have to be vigilant about being spun from virtually any direction.
Right, which is why you have to, when you have sources, why you protect them is because good sources are hard to get. And also because, you know, for example, you could have sources that are, I was just telling this to someone today, but we were talking about informants and why the government, especially intelligence agencies, tend to rely on criminals as informants. And you know, for example, someone could be, you know, a con man, a drug dealer, an arms dealer, and the government will put them on a salary, the intelligence community, one of them, put them on a salary and set them up in a nice home, and they're credible in terms of the information that they provide. But if for any reason they're exposed, no one will believe them because they're a criminal. They're so easily discredited, yet in that scenario, they're the good guy.
And that's called a cutout.
No, that's called an informant.
Okay, but it's somebody who can be cut out if necessary, right?
No, a cutout is a front, an in between, a proxy.
Mm-hmm.
And this isn't a proxy, this is like a mole. The reason you pick someone criminal is because a criminal element can infiltrate another criminal element much more successfully. So let's say that's someone they're using, and sometimes all sorts of things. When you're dealing with these kinds of elements, you're not always in control. They kind of go bananas, and sometimes they simply just don't like you. And that actually happened to me once, where I was meeting with an informant I was told to meet with, and it was truly a very frightening experience because the person turned on me and was very paranoid, and so it was not comfortable. But
yeah.
You do the best you can, and you kind of, it's true while you, there's the fear of being spun. The fact is you have your, what I call your gem sources, the ones that are, you know, impeccable. And you check things that are, you have questions about you can't check otherwise. I think if you go to your gem sources and they see it as credible, I think you're going to have to, you know, sometimes have faith in that they are telling you the truth.
Mm-hmm.
But usually there's independent ways of checking things.
Yeah. Mike, anything else?
I wanted to know if Raw Story is working on anything related to election fraud in the intelligence community.
Oh, boy. Which intelligence community?
The United States.
No, I mean, when you say intelligence community, do you mean specifically a particular department, organization?
No, anybody that would be interested in altering elections.
And
oh,
you're
wow.
suspecting?
Through electronic voting machines or tabulators or centralized registration databases. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's funny you should ask, and kind of creepy, actually, but,
Well, thank you.
Sorry, have we spoken before? Funny you should ask that.
I think we'll take that as a question that needs to be deflected, and, we'll...
For now, let's leave that alone. I think there are, not necessarily a raw story, there are people working on various angles of election fraud, I think the better known ones, if you follow election fraud, you know who I'm talking about,
mm-hmm.
are certainly looking at that angle. I don't know myself at the level of detail involving intelligence. How about that?
Okay.
Best I can do.
All right.
Keep up the good work.
Thank you, Mike. Good to hear from you this evening. Thank you very much. Larissa, we've got just a couple of minutes remaining here, so I wanted to give you a chance to kind of complete the thread that we have been meandering through this hour, and it's my fault, not yours. But to what extent do you see Iran as either urging or instructing Hezbollah to create this diversion from Iran's showdown with the United States? Do you see these events as connected?
I see them connected differently. You have to remember, the Persians are chess players. They know how to. They know strategy, and they're patient people. There's two possibilities. There's a camp, a group of people who believe that I've talked to who believe that Iran felt it was going to be attacked anyway. It was a matter of time. So
mm-hmm.
it created a trap.
Right.
And politically, the trap has worked, certainly. There's another camp who believes that, and I'm certainly in this latter camp, that the plan had been on the table. And if you really look back at not just my articles, but Laura Rosen or Cy Hirsch, if you look back over the past year, there's been aggressive activity toward Iran on both the Israeli front and the U.S. part. And what I think is more likely is they're trying to provoke, and if they can't provoke, they're going to set up. In other words, frame. My opinion is Iran right now is doing nothing. It's giving, it's sitting and waiting, and it's got its assets, from what I understand, assets already moving around, that if they are attacked, there will be immediate retaliation. In fact, there was a Michael Smith of the Sunday London Times did a great piece on that.
Mm-hmm.
But I, in my opinion, I don't believe that this is a setup on Iran's part. I just, given the sort of nonstop attempts at, on their end to try to negotiate, and given the sort of volatile situation and the mess and the possibility of a nuclear attack, my understanding is that they're sufficiently patient and sufficiently concerned about not reacting. And so I think first they're being baited, threatened, baited. There's that whole issue with the United States going to the European banks and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But also within their own country, they're being disrupted by the use of the MEK. And I think this use of Hezbollah or this event with Hezbollah was very suspicious to me, simply because Hezbollah hasn't really engaged Israel in so long. I simply don't know if that was a U.S. kind of, nudge
mm-hmm.
to a couple of folks in Hezbollah, or whether that was, pure accident or what had happened there. But there's no question that in my opinion, this is led by U.S. and Israel.
Larissa, thanks for joining us. Enjoyed
Thank
spending
you.
This hour with you. Read rawstory.com, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you.
Happy trails to you.
I'm Peter B. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back at you tomorrow. Same time, same stations on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Happy trails to you.
Hello, this is Al Moore with More Imported Cars in Monterey, where we feature quality pre-owned motor cars. It has been said that the world's best automobiles are manufactured within sight of the Alps. They include Mercedes-Benz, BMWs, and Porsches. These are the marks of dreams, and they're the manufacturers we specialize in. Some of our European autos start as low as $21,000 and experience very little depreciation. In fact, many of our Porsches actually increase in value, and our Porsches and other German autos have surprisingly good gas mileage, too. Many of our autos are covered under manufacturer's warranty or are available with short or long-term service agreements. We also can arrange financing, and we do accept trades.
Drop by More Imported Cars, 999 Del Monte Avenue in Monterey, or browse to moreimports.com. That's M-O-H-R, imports.com. Call Al Moore at 831-373-3131.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News. I'm Harley Carnes. Get the AC all cranked up. Power companies are adding up the heat wave dollars like watching the slots spin. CBS's Trish Regan in New York.
We asked the city's emergency services chief, John Perugia, to point out potential trouble. He hit the streets.
How you doing?
Warning sunbathers.
You're staying out in the sun too long is not the most healthiest thing.
Well, scolding joggers.
I just got these new shoes.
I have my new running shoes at home, too, but I'm not out running today like that.
Yeah.
And reminding these teenage athletes to be on the lookout for heat-related symptoms.
If you start to get cramping or lightheaded or dizzy, you know, go inside.
The biggest concern in temperatures like this, heat stroke, something Perugia's entire team is on the lookout for.
Tropical Storm Chris could really be bad news.
We are expecting it to become a hurricane in the next 24 to 48 hours.
National Hurricane Center's Jennifer Pralgo and the current prediction cone points to an arrival in a few days over the southern half of Florida and into the Gulf. Israel has resumed the air war over Lebanon, striking Hezbollah targets deep inside the country. CBS's Lee Cowan is in Beirut.
Hezbollah countered with its own strikes, deeper into Israel than it's ever gone before. Over 200 rockets left more than 120 Israelis injured. One was killed. Turns out he was an Israeli-American riding his bike home just as the sirens went off near the town of Nahariya. Despite Israel's airstrikes on its firing positions, Hezbollah still averages about 100 rockets a day. It's Hezbollah's ability to stay in the fight that for many here is victory in itself.
If it goes to trial, the misdemeanor charges against Mel Gibson could mean some jail time for driving drunk. CBS's Steve Futterman says chances are jail won't happen.
Mel Gibson was not charged with any felonies. This means he can be represented by his attorneys and does not have to appear in person in court. If Gibson pleads guilty or no contest, he will likely have to pay a fine, attend an alcohol prevention program, and be put on probation. But it's very doubtful Gibson will have to serve any time in jail.
American Indians want a protective buffer zone set up around Bear Butte in southwest South Dakota. Why? To protect sacred Indian land from the huge motorcycle rally at nearby Sturgis every year. Indians say they want an end.